Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Size matters not. Look at me. Judge me by my size, do you? And where you should not. For my ally is the Force. And a powerful ally it is. Life feeds it. Makes it grow. Its energy surrounds us. And binds us. Luminous beings shall be. Not this crude matter. You must feel the Force around you. Here. Between you. Me. Around. Everywhere. Yes.
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Star Wars special. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I am holed up on a party boat at Canto Bight.
My name is Brianna Robinson, and I'm chilling in Maz Kanata's rebuilt castle on Takodana. It looks exactly the same as the first one.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I have moved into a recently vacated military installation on Crate, because I'm a big fan of salt and
foxes.
Those cute little crystal fox guys.
We're here to talk about The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, and inevitably probably acknowledge that there is another Star Wars movie coming out next week. It's The Rise of Skywalker coming out next weekend. We will have an episode that is entirely about that, that will be split into our normal storm and calm sections. But probably, you know, also some spoilers. So we'll probably look for that one next week, a little bit more around the actual release, so we don't, you know, accidentally dump a whole bunch of spoilers on the unsuspecting public right as they're about to watch Rise of Skywalker. We're here to talk about the other sequel trilogy movies, though, The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. We're going to do it in a couple of segments, as we have for our previous Star Wars season episodes. We've done one on the prequels. We did a live show on the original trilogy. Now it's here. We're here to talk the Reylo movies.
Or the sequel trilogy, as some people would prefer we call it, right?
Well, it depends.
Does it have an official name?
I don't think so.
You don't think sequel trilogy? Prequel, original, sequel? I think people call it sequel trilogy.
Okay.
I mean, I imagine that's the acknowledged name, but as somebody who's lived through the production of these movies and release of these movies, I still have very fond memories of trying to make everybody refer to BB-8 as female through force of will, because we didn't know, and why would you do that? So I'm a big fan of, until it's like printed on a poster somewhere, it could be the Reylo trilogy. That's the thing. That's the thing about modern Star Wars movies. You really got to plant your flag, I feel.
Well,
shoot with your heart and plant your flag.
The thing that
fight for what you love, Dave.
We're going to be talking about Reylo, the ship between Kylo and Rey, obviously, in this podcast. But we did get at least one email sort of making the case against the Reylo ship. So I think we have not been acknowledging the fact that there is a large segment of the fan base that is not down with Reylo, and maybe has some good reasons why. So we're gonna try to both sides it here on this podcast. That's why I'm hesitant to call it the Reylo trilogy. You know.
Oh, when I use that term, I'm just like, that's just like the term. I'm not into the ship, I guess, or I guess I don't care about the ship. But that's interesting. I guess then yes, we can call it the sequel trilogy. That maybe
Fair
makes
enough.
More sense.
if we're going to be ship forward with the hybrid name, then yes, I suppose it's more responsible to be a sequel trilogy. But I think it's also important right up here at top, say we're not going to be spoiling Rise of Skywalker in any way. Can we make that pact with each other?
Yeah.
That Holy Force pact?
I actually don't really know a whole lot about what's going to happen in Rise of Skywalker. So
perfect. So it's only going to be me that has to bleep things out. Great. Perfect. Great.
That's how I remember. Like you told me everything that happens. I remember. I'm just we're good at dodging spoilers. It's fine. We're not spoiling anything.
Excellent. In that case, let's remind ourselves where we are with our first segment, where I am assigned a time limit in which to explain either these two movies, each movie individually. I don't get to call it because I have to make it up on the fly. Who's time limiting me this time?
I picked last time, so Neil, if you want to pick this time, you can.
Oh. Let's see. This is interesting. So it's two movies. Can you do both of them in 1 minute?
All right, maybe. Let me get out my stopwatch here.
Do a one Dave's 1 minute summary.
No, I'm gonna time you. This is not how we don't let you time yourself.
Oh yeah.
Well, no, I'm gonna have a stopwatch up so I could know how much I'm going, because otherwise I'm gonna get like bogged down and like explaining what you know, the weird elephant creature that Finn drinks water from and not realize I'm 10 seconds in. All right, here we go. The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. On the desert planet of Jakku, where there are ruins of a major battle with the Empire, we find Scavenger Rey, who is living her life, having been abandoned by her parents, dreaming of her family coming home one day, and she is thrown into a conflict with a stormtrooper who has not had the stomach for killing things, and a resistance pilot who in his nice little ball droid are the remainders of a map to Skywalker. And together they get off the desert planet, find Han Solo, go to the resistance, realize there's another Death Star, blow up that Death Star, but unfortunately lose Han Solo along the way to his son, who is the new Dark Lord. And that causes a whole bunch of problems, even though they find Luke Skywalker, because Luke Skywalker does not want to be involved in their war, forcing Rey to take up the position of the last Jedi and defend the resistance on a salt planet, and Luke Skywalker force Skypes so hard he dies from the effort. The end.
I can't believe I was looking at my stopwatch. You hit it exactly time-wise. But I was looking at my stopwatch. You had like 10 seconds to go and you hadn't done anything from The Last Jedi.
The Last Jedi is kind of slight in terms of incidents.
A sentence. You're like, yeah. Snoke? Who is that? No time.
Some other shit happens in The Last
yeah,
Jedi.
Yeah, not important.
Yada, yada, yada.
Yada, yada, yada. Rose tight. Like, fuck. Where's the hashtag? Where's Rose?
Hashtag where's Leia?
Yeah.
There's there's a lot of stuff left out in there, but I think you got all the core plot points.
I mean, I think you did, but I think you lose points for not at least mentioning Space Dern, which is an important element to the sequel trilogy.
I mean, for us and in our hearts, but plot-wise, is it?
Excellent question.
See, the nice thing about Star Wars movies is they're all kind of chase movies. So
what
unless
about,
you're like,
what
I went from here to then to here and then to here, you could just go from A to C and assume that you had B in there somewhere.
Don't you think the death of Snoke and the, like, rise of, Kylo, the potential... I think, listen... This has been a hard task we've set you. I say the first two times you smashed out of the park. This one, I think you made an error in only leaving 10 seconds to The Last Jedi.
I mean, I guess, but Kylo Ren becomes the new Dark Lord after killing his father really seems like the most incidental thing that's happened to Kylo Ren over these two movies.
I guess what you're saying is like a meta commentary is that Snoke really didn't matter that much.
What I love about The Last Jedi, or no, what I love about both these movies, before we get into my other game, is that, they are both exactly what I think, like, the franchise needed. Like, The Force Awakens is like, we're back, we're new, but we're not that new, don't worry about it, we're mostly fun, like, boom, 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 pew, 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 tsh, boom, boom, and there's Luke Skywalker at the end, and yay! I want more movies, which is like a amazing thing, especially after the prequels, where like after, you know, Attack of the Clones, I was like, oh, okay, I guess there's just one more. So like different feeling altogether. And then The Last Jedi is actually Star Wars metatextually reckoning with itself, which is nice and refreshing and divisive. And I like all those things about it and it as a movie. But we're going to talk about that later because it's time for another game where I get to rub weird canon in your guys' faces.
I don't like how far Rub was from whatever. Okay.
For we get to celebrate the Rub. Like that? That was better?
Okay. Well, I guess that is the Rub, yeah.
Wow. Just like pieces of crate in the wound. Here comes this segment.
It's all the red salt.
Real Star Wars names or not, I'm going to give you guys groupings of three names. One will be a real in-canon Star Wars name. The other will be a Legends or not canon Star Wars name, but at one time was a Star Wars name. And the third is one I made up. Who wants to go first?
Neil.
Sure.
All right, Neil, yours is These Sound Like People Choking. Here we go. Peekpa, Pogorf, and Luuk. Those are your three names.
That last one. Wow.
Which one? Like go
the
ahead.
Third one is the one you made up.
Oh, good sir. Luuk, or Luke spelled with two U's, is this clone of Luke Skywalker that shows up in the Legends novel Star Wars The Last Command.
No, wow, that's ridiculous.
They named the Luke clone Luke with two U's.
They did. And I only know how to pronounce it because the audiobook version is Luuk.
Oh my god.
Wow.
This is so worth it. Okay. Just for that little factoid. Okay, well then, what were the other two again?
Peekpa and Pogorf.
Pogorf sounds real.
Pogorf is the one I made up.
Jesus Christ.
Ooh yeah. Peekpa is an Ewok slicer from the novel Star Wars Last Shot.
I was with you, Neil. I was getting, well, not necessarily on Luke, but on I was like, Peekpa, that's some lazy Pokemon naming from Dave, but I guess not. Wow.
All right. Joanna, these are going to be people with, I guess, like positions in a hierarchy.
Okay.
Admiral Daala, that's Daala, Shakta Alpha, and Constable Zuvio.
Zuvio, I know Zuvio is like real, but is Zuvio canon or is Zuvio Legends? Zuvio is canon.
Zuvio is canon.
Yes!
I remember appearing on screen.
Yes!
Right. He was supposed to be in The Force Awakens, right?
He was supposed to be in The Force Awakens.
I have a Constable Zuvio Black Series figure somewhere. It's one of my three yes. Black Series figures that I've ever bought.
Thank you for softballing me an easy one. I appreciate it, and I almost fucked it up anyway. All right, so Zuvio's canon. What are my two remaining ones?
Admiral Daala and Shakta Alpha.
Does Admiral Daala have two A's like Luke has two U's?
D-A-A-L-A.
Admiral Daala, like Amidala, but with two A's. And then Shakta something something?
Shakta Alpha.
Shakta Alpha. I think you made up Shakta Alpha, and I think Admiral Daala, which is very close to Amidala, is Legends. Is that right?
That is correct.
What? I've never gotten one of these.
Admiral Daala.
You win the whole trilogy. Because no one
by besting me. How dare you? Admiral Daala is the antagonist in the Jedi Academy trilogy.
Great. Awesome stuff. Yay.
Yeah.
Me.
Pretty sweet. All right. Neil, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
These are people specifically in the Imperial hierarchy. Gideon Hask, Governor Pratt, Dusk Mistflyer.
Is it Governor?
Dusk is spelled D-U-S-Q-U-E.
Is it Governor Chris Pratt?
No, it has two A's and one has like an apostrophe on it.
Oh man.
Pratt.
Double vowel.
Pratt?
That's that feels like a tell. Unless it's a trick. Unless you're Jedi tricking me. Right
it's
now.
A trap with three A's.
Unless it's a trap. Give me those three one more time.
Gideon Hask, Governor Pratt, which is how I choose to pronounce it, and Dusk Mistflyer.
Dusk Mistflyer sounds like a Legends thing.
That is correct.
Hell yeah.
Dusk Mistflyer is the protagonist in the Star Wars Galaxies The Ruins of Dantooine novel.
Sure.
Wow. Wow.
That I read that one. Commander?
Governor Pratt, Pratt and Gideon Hask.
Governor Pratt, I think, is real. And the first one you made up.
Governor Pratt, I made up.
Damn it.
Governor
Gideon Hask is the.
It was
Pratt.
A trick. It was a trap with two A's. Damn it.
Gideon Hask is the Imperial officer villain in Battlefront 2.
Which I have played. it's bad that I don't know that because I played that game.
All right. Joanna, you get fun names, I'm going to say. These are fun names. All these names, I wouldn't mind being any of these people. All right, here we go. Mercurial Swift, Darth Cadus, and Anaxin Grace.
Oh.
They're all good band names, too. That's what this category should have been. Good band names.
They're all somehow related to Zori Bliss.
Anaxin Grace definitely doesn't sound like Zori Bliss. What's the middle one again?
Darth Cadus.
Darth Cadus. That sounds familiar to me. Darth Cadus. Darth Cadus. Darth Cadus is Legends.
That is correct. That is Jason Solo's name after he turns to the dark side in the New Jedi Order novel. So he's your Kylo Ren analog.
Who's Jason Solo again?
He's one of the twins that Han and Leia have.
Oh, all right, okay. Oh, that were snuffed out by Disney. Sorry. Sorry, bud. Yeah,
and were the basis for many a Rey's parents are really Han and Leia theory.
Right. Okay, yeah. I've heard you mention this person before. Okay, so... Okay, and Mercurial Swift and Anaxin Grace.
Correct.
Which one just sounds like something Dave Gonzalez would make up?
See, that's the problem. I have tried to attack it from that angle each time, and I just can't get inside Dave's mind. Like,
it's because if you write a Star Wars Legends novel, you are a me-level geek to begin with, so we're all just making up names at that point.
Zephyr!
Exactly.
Okay, fine. Mercurial Swift, Anaxin Grace. Mercurial Swift, Anaxin Grace. I'm going to say you made up Anaxin Grace.
That is correct. I made up Anaxin Grace.
No! Yes!
Mercurial Swift.
Who the fuck is Mercurial Swift?
He is a bounty hunter of the Star Wars Aftermath novels.
Is he temperamental and fast?
Basically, yeah. But if the god Mercury doesn't exist a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, he kind of doesn't get the joke.
All right.
Neil, last category, just more ridiculous names, I think.
Is this the last
right.
one? It's the last one.
This is the last one.
Then Neil and I get to do it together. That's what I said.
Okay, then you guys can do it together. You can.
Yeah, it's going to take teamwork for me to get one.
Here we go. Rin Riven Die. Kalish the Worm and Lobaka.
Lord Peter Kalish the Worm?
Lord Peter Kalish the Worm. The little worm.
I feel like Lobaka is real.
Yeah, Lobaka is definitely real. Like, I mean.
But is it legend?
Yeah. Right. Lobaka is definitely a thing. I've definitely heard Lobaka.
Where did we hear it? Did we hear it in the holiday special? Which is the holiday special canon? Life Day's canon.
Didn't we decide the holiday special was canon?
I love because, like, for our podcast listeners, this was a week ago, but for you guys, it was like 2 weeks ago.
When you told us whether or not.
And when we discussed Chewbacca's family.
I'm going to say Lobaka is canon.
I agree with you. Lobaka is canon.
Lobaka. Is Legends.
No!
Dun, dun, dun. He is Chewbacca's nephew that was force sensitive in Jedi Knight's Heir to the Force.
Oh,
but
man.
The holiday special is canon, right? Isn't that what we decided?
No, but Chewbacca's wife and child are canon.
Okay, that's right.
And something so is about, Life Day.
Yeah.
So is Life Day.
So the family's canon, but not the nephew, but the wife and child.
Exactly. God, not the force sensitive nephew.
All right.
Okay, so that takes Legends off the board.
Yeah. Yep. So we've got Rin Riven Dai and Kalish the Worm.
I think Kalish the Worm
spelled W-Y-R, like dragon wise.
Kalish
like worm.
The Worm sounds made up, but that also might be a trap.
Is Worm spelled W-Y-R-M?
It is.
That's made up. That you made that up.
Yeah, Kalish Worm. I think is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, that's Lord Peeler Baelish plus. A D&D term for a dragon.
All right, good. Rin Riven Dai is a Star Wars Bloodline cartel character. That was real Star Wars names, or not. You guys did do excellent.
Yeah, I feel like
round,
we improved.
I think we definitely improved.
Yeah.
Do you have, like, now that it's all over, can you share with us your method of, like, coming up with these fake names?
Saying them out loud to myself.
Did you do it all at once, or were you like would you be strolling through downtown Denver and you're like, oh, Kalish the Worm, that's a good one, and like text it to yourself?
I'd put them in like weird categories, like things with lots of eyes or good band names, and then I'd do the Legends one first and then the canon one, and then I'd try to like mess up, make the choices as hard as possible by whatever I made up.
Well, Lord,
they couldn't just be good, they had to be good for that group, you know.
Lord Peter Kalish is my favorite one, and
yeah, good. It was the last one. I was running low on
imagine
battery.
He's some sort of like calamari offshoot.
Mm-hmm. I blew it on an Axe and Grace. I was like, fuck, that's a great band name, and then that was the end. All right, one more segment of canon versus not canon madness in this one.
AKA one more segment where Neil and Joanna look so dumb to our listeners who know so much more about Star Wars than we do. Sorry.
It's really,
Neil, what's
it's
the name
really
of this segment?
About teaching us humility when we
That's right.
file the ventral canon.
Wait, why were you, why
correct.
Were you German?
I don't know.
Hux isn't German.
They're like, oh, what? Fair. All right. I'm going to read a plot, a Star Wars plot, and you have to tell me if this is a Legends plot or a canon plot. Here we go. After observing an Imperial dig on the desert planet of Jakku, a young scrapper snuck aboard an Imperial ship only to be discovered by Emperor Palpatine himself and tasked with the duty to return to Jakku and protect the dig site.
I'm going with real. That one sounds like from one of the new novels.
Joanna, do you agree with Neil?
Oh, I do.
I can't let you guys go back and forth this time because you used it against me for the prequel series.
I should never talk strategy out loud from Dave. I do think it was real.
That is correct. It's from the novel Star Wars Aftermath Life Debt. And
yeah, those books are really into
Galax
Jakku.
Rax. Yeah, Jakku. What happened on Jakku? Who knows?
Based on our intro, none of us are super into it, though.
Well, who wants to live on the desert planet where you have to like rehydrate your brain?
Sand! It gets everywhere! It's
just
so
shitty Tatooine at that
rough.
Point.
Rough, and it gets everywhere. It's just...
All right, here we go. Number two. Powerful remnants of the vanquished empire, hungry for retaliation, are still at large, committing acts of piracy, terrorism, and wholesale slaughter against the worlds of the fledgling republic. The most deadly of these, a ruthless legion of black-armored stormtroopers, do the brutal bidding of the newly risen warlord Shadowspawn.
Wait, is this real? Just real or not real? Or real or once was real or not real?
I'm not making these up. These are either plots of Legends stories or real Star Wars stories.
Got it.
I thought this was real until the very end there.
When he said Shadowspawn?
Yeah, that feels very Legends-y to me.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, you guys are right. That's the plot of Star Wars, Luke Skywalker, and the Shadows of Mindor.
Oh, yeah, Mindor.
Isn't Shadow Spawn also a thing from Wheel of Time?
Possibly.
Interesting. Okay.
The other thing is that as we record this, this is not a canon plot, but I have no idea what they're going to call Giancarlo Esposito in, like, The Mandalorian, so... Shadows of Mindor might have its day in the sun. You heard it here first. I just thought it was ridiculous. All right, here we go. Next one. But similarly tinged. No. Yes. Immediately after the Battle of Endor, what was left of the Empire began raising planets connected to the history of the Empire, targeting the planets of Vardos, Burnin Khan, Kando Vant, Abnedo, Kamenor, Nacronis, and Naboo.
Raising them, like the scouring of the Shire?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they attacked Naboo?
Mm-hmm.
That's tough. That almost makes it feel real.
Okay, wait. Okay, let's go through this.
Almost.
Thing. The Battle of Endor happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
They lose.
Yeah.
But what remains? The Saurmans go and attack these other planets
that have history connected to the Empire.
Naboo.
Well, there's something about the newer stories, these newer canon stories, where they are sort of like really keying in on like the history or the the origins of the Empire, the origins of the Jedi. They're going back to all these old planets. So this one kind of feels real.
Yeah. All right, I'll agree with you.
Neil says real, Joanna says real. I can't reveal the answer until you guys choose for the next one. Here we go.
Great.
At Luke Skywalker's Jedi Academy, a brilliant student delves dangerously into the dark side of the Force and unleashes the spirit of an ancient master of an evil order that warped Darth Vader himself.
That's super legendsy.
Wait, no, isn't...
Unless that's the story of Kylo Ren.
That's the story of Kylo Ren, isn't it? Isn't that the story? Aren't we talking about Ben Solo?
No, it sounds a little different though.
Well, he's talking about Darth Sidious, right? Who warped Darth Vader himself? That's Darth Sidious. It's Ben.
Maybe.
I'm sorry. Wait. Dave, say it again.
Yeah.
At Luke Skywalker's Jedi Academy, a brilliant student delves dangerously into the dark side of the Force and unleashes the spirit of an ancient master of the evil order that warps Darth Vader himself.
Oh, an ancient master of the evil order.
He unleashes the spirit?
So a Sith Lord, an ancient Sith master, not necessarily Sidious.
Yeah, that feels super legendsy to me. That's something they would get rid of so they could tell the Kylo Ren story.
Is this the story of the Sith Holocron, Dave?
Well, would that be a canon story or a legend story, Joanna?
The Sith Holocron thing?
Well, Sith Holocrons are canon, but is this particular story the real story?
This one really does feel like I could go either way.
This feels like a trap. This feels like like if I knew more about Ezra, I would know the answer to this. But it's not like Ezra studied with Luke. That's a different timeline. So I think it's real. I think it's canon.
All right, here we go. Neil says legends. Joanna says canon. And Neil is correct.
Damn it!
Which also means you guys were both correct for the other one. Immediately after the Battle of Endor was left, the Empire began raising the planets, blah, 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 that included Naboo. That's the plot of the single-player campaign of Battlefront 2, which apparently Neil played and forgot about.
Maybe I didn't forget the whole thing, though. Who knows?
Yeah, it's somewhere there you remember defending Naboo from Operation Cinder. All right. Guys, I think that's going to do it.
Sorry, say once again what the last thing is from.
I'm sorry. It's from Jedi Academy Dark Apprentice.
Okay.
The ancient Sith Lord that he resurrects is not like Kylo Ren resurrecting Snoke, but it did. I was like, hey, if read vaguely, this is Ben Solo. So trap set and fallen into.
Oh, it's a trap with five A's.
So many A's. All right, guys. We are going to be back to talk about the actual Reylo trilogy right after this.
Now is the time on the podcast where we like to shout out our Dark Apprentices, our Small Council Patreon subscribers. If you go to patreon.com/genrespoilers, you can join us there. And at the Small Council level right now, I know they're doing like a holiday gift exchange. So, that is what is happening at the Small Council. Also, we'll be watching a holiday movie together. There's just like a lot of fun stuff that we do at the Small Council level of the Patreons. We'd like to thank those folks, starting with some newbies like Aaron Stargarian, Stuart Wynn, PP, Clark Ainsley, Emilio Diaz, Cameron Frederickson, Dimitri Portnoy, Melissa Horsfall, Mariana Cotto, I think I bungle that every time, Mariana, sorry, Nate, Robbie Rapace, Jose Cordova, Emily Ralph, Amy Gomez, Maggie Craddock, Laurel White, Chris Miracle, Brandy Mandato, Judy Wick, Cameron Fowler, and Erland Holbeck. Thank you guys so much.
And I'd like to add to that my many thanks to, or our many thanks, I should speak for all of us, Julie Sorrells, Delane Mitchell, Amy Calhoun, Mark Tozer, Christina Sullivan, Saquon Gatling, Joe Janka, Bryce Quine, Ira Storm, Melissa Slaughter, Great on Toast, Victoria McDuffie, Marianne Donnelly, Jim Scott, Anne Moreau, Stacy Winkleplek, Jocelyn, Loon DeMello, Cody Dreigies, and Fiona Grimm.
And I would like to thank the following Small Council members: Aaron, Brian Rapp, Holly Hunt, Madison Ray, Carrie, Jason Blackmer, Robert Bowles, Chuck Parkey, Cameron Graham, Mark Jewett, Tom Sapansky, Mick Nick, James Barta, Shane O'Reilly, Jocelyn Land, Belinda Hogan, Kaylee Serrano, Jeremiah Perez, Micah Wood, and Sarah Gates. Thank you all so very much for being part of our Small Council.
And we're back to talk about the sequel trilogy of movies, or however we talk about it when we've only seen two of the three movies of the sequel trilogy. But that's happening right now. Joanna, I hear we have an email that we, from one of our listeners for the sequel trilogy this week.
We do. This one comes from Ross Brown, who is a long time, not first time, I think.
Long time, many time.
Long time, many time, Ross Brown. I recognize your name, Ross. Anyway, Ross writes, first, thank you for pausing to dedicate a month-ish of your time to the trilogies. Each episode so far has been a delight to listen to. Feel free to simply continue with months more of Star Wars content. Secondly, I just want to reach out to, about everyone's favorite or least favorite ship of the sequel trilogy. While everyone is free to ship whomever they want to ship, to like whatever characters they want to like, I'm hoping that when you discuss interactions between Rey and Kylo Ren, you do take time to address the complicated nature of the Reylo ship. There are definitely many who want to see the son of Han and Leia hook up with Rey from nowhere, but for others, it's disconcerting, at least based on Kylo Ren's actions up to this point, because they can be interpreted as abusive and harmful. In The Force Awakens, beyond the very obvious attempts by Kylo Ren to actually kill Rey with a pause to offer to train her, like any good Darksider, he's looking for an apprentice, his earlier interactions with her are alarming. He first restrains her on Takodana against her will, and then knocks her unconscious. Back at Starkiller Base, he then uses the Force to penetrate her mind against her will. It's a mental assault that's only stopped when she reactively beats him back and into his own conscious/subconscious. Things don't really get better in The Last Jedi, where her first instinct when the Force bond, pushed on both by Snoke, is to kill him. As Luke rejects Rey as a student, she shares her own experiences trying to figure out who she is with Kylo. A great writer, Abigail Dillon, points out that in the infamous shirtless scene, Rey is uncomfortable with Kylo not covering up, a discomfort he completely ignores when she asks him to grab a towel. And there's a link here to the article by Abigail Dillon that is at the 1138.com website. But more importantly, in the throne room scene after the pair teams up to kill Snoke's red licorice guards, Kylo uses emotionally abusive and manipulative language against Rey. It's language an abuser uses to keep someone in a relationship with them, to demean them, to reduce their value so they feel they only have any meaning by remaining with their abuser. And here Ross has transcribed the interaction, but you know, the whole like you're nothing but not to me is the gist of that. FYI, this is a great parallel to Vader trying to get Luke to join him in Cloud City, playing on an emotional connection to have someone join up to rule the galaxy together, but inverted slightly because it's the absence of parents, not the existence. The most important words in the scene above are Ren's: you have no place in this story. You belong nowhere. You come from nothing. You have no value. You're nothing. Seriously, you're nobody, but not to me. Join me. I give you value. That was complicated, but Ross is putting in like sort of parenthetical translations. I swear I didn't mean to write a thesis on this, but it's important to understand that Reylo isn't harmless shipping. For survivors of abuse, it's ignoring behavior that is problematic at best and manipulated and cruel at worst. As I noted, people are free to ship whomever they want, but not all ships are created free of problems or concerns. Also, I do think that it's becoming common in the Rise of Skywalker public discourse for Reylo to become shorthand for the relationship, romantic or not, between the two characters. Any hoots, thanks for making it this far, awake and not with a finger slowly edging towards the block button. Y'all rock. Have a great night. Can't wait for the sequel trilogy talk next week. So I think that that's just, and you know, we have Lindsay Romaine back on the podcast this week. Lindsay is hosting, a podcast called Halo Reylo. Lindsay's a huge proponent of like sort of the Reylo ship, the Reylo relationship. She and I talked about exactly this, the sort of like problematic nature of that ship. So tune in to hear like some of Lindsay's thoughts on this, but I was curious, Dave and Neil, if you had some thoughts on Ross's email. Dave.
yes.
Okay.
I was waiting for someone to point to me because I really think I'm probably guilty of just shorthanding it for meaning the relationship in general, because I do think that it is that back and forth that's the more compelling war in these sequel Star Wars. It's like an interpersonal one between two people trying to, you know, find their place when the previous generation like fucked up. And I think it's very emblematic of the times. We have a attractive man who, you know, gets away with a lot of bad behavior, and a female who's struggling to get people to take her seriously. And I think that that, you know, paradigm being part of the Star Wars narrative is loads more interesting than the father-son dynamic that was required in the original trilogy just to, you know, make it this like mythical space opera. It allows the sequel trilogy to be about something. So I heartily agree with the email. But then especially when it says, you know, you could ship who you want to ship in this fictional universe, just be aware of what you're doing. To me, that just tracks as like, it's great to have, Star Wars talking to the time that it's being released, which I think is a part of the prequel trilogy that doesn't really track because George Lucas was in doing a whole bunch of other things, both visually and storytelling wise. But the original trilogy definitely, you know, captured the imaginations to put people, you know, in conflict. We've talked about this Star Wars reflect, you know, the war of its time. I think the sequel trilogy kind of is reflecting us trying to cope with each other in this like momentous occasion where we kind of look backwards and are like, oh no, things got real fucked up. And the complexity of that is baked into it. It's great to have complex Star Wars, because a lot of times it felt like that was the difference between Star Wars super fans and just like people who thought we were geeks, is could you look at, you know, Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi and find the real things in it to talk about. And it leads to a lot of, you know, like weird discussions, like why would Jabba the Hutt put Princess Leia in a bikini that sexualized her, and those sorts of things. But there are questions there. That's one of the purest ways you can approach discourse about trauma and harassment and their portrayal in media is by this big blockbuster thing that everybody can enter and, you know, for the most part, not be wrong about, have opinions about. Like, there are a lot of correct opinions, I think, to the portrayals of these characters. Whether or not they'll all be around at the end of Rise of Skywalker is up to J.J. Abrams, but it seems like so far, since he, you know, kicked them off into space, that the mix is very potent for modern Star Wars.
Neil, do you have any thoughts on this?
I do. First of all, great email. Thanks, Ross. Agree with a lot of that. Agree with, well, all of it. Agree with everything Dave said there. I have long suspected that Kylo Ren was a real piece of shit. And I feel like you can tell from the way he acts. He's not, he's, and I, you know, Kylo Ren is, I guess, my interpretation of this, has always been like, it's the, there is an element there. There's the sort of power dynamic between the two and the way he abuses that. And then there's the story of her sort of believing that there's a different person inside, which I think is an interesting relationship dynamic that the movies are trying to explore that I don't think I have a full grasp on yet because we haven't seen the next one. However, since I am told that I can ship whoever I want, I would like to propose a ship that I think would work to solve all problems, including getting Rey away from Kylo Ren, who's obviously toxic and bad. People are very into the Finn and Poe ship, but I'm here to tell you in all the, you know, pop culture that I've experienced that we can embrace, three people in a situation. So
it's
what
a
if
thruple.
It's a thruple and it's Finn and Poe, obviously, and Rey, because there's that moment at the end of The Last Jedi when Rey finally meets Poe where she's like, oh. Like, there's just like a, oh, I didn't, I,
it's a, because, how you doing?
Yeah. I mean, if you think about Rey's life, she hasn't met a lot of people. And Kylo is he's a fascinating, powerful force, a magnetic personality. We can obviously see that he does not have her best interest at heart. So I think that there is also that element of, you know, Rey, similar to Luke, being sort of the wide-eyed kid at the beginning, and she's learning. And so I think that what I'd like to see is her to learn that, you know, a couple people can get together and just be a hot three people, you know, a hot thruple. So there you go. That's what I have to say.
Yeah. We figured out like a way for, fish people to be admirals in our normal atmosphere and we can't figure out thruples.
In defense of the Reylo ship, and I, you know, you'll hear me talk to Lindsay about, I acknowledge a lot of these problems. I don't consider myself like a diehard Reylo ship or anything like that, but I will say that I think a lot of the people who are invested in the Reylo relationship, whether or not they consider it romantically or not, are trying to think about Kylo Ren as, a Ben Solo trapped in a prison of Sithiness. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The same way that we think of Anakin Skywalker as like trapped inside the Darth Vaderiness. And by the end of the Return of the Jedi, we want Anakin Skywalker to reemerge and we want him to defend his son and we want him to have that tender moment with Luke at the end of Return of the Jedi. And so if you're able to separate Ben Solo from Kylo Ren in that way, this idea of like the flashes of potential good or vulnerability, I suppose, that we see in him is something that people can be rooting for, like the good in him to win over the evil in him. Because, you know, Anakin Skywalker as Darth Vader committed many atrocities, starting with the younglings, and only got worse from there, you know? So like Vader irredeemable, Anakin Skywalker perhaps still salvageable, and maybe the same thing is true for Ben Solo versus Kylo Ren. That being said, this is a benefit of the doubt that is afforded white men and especially attractive white men that like a lot of like women and people of color are not afforded in stories. So, you know, if you want to just be like Kylo Ren's a fuckboy and fuck him forever, I support you. If you want to be like, hey, I see there is good in him, I can feel it. How can Star Wars argue with you about that?
Yeah.
You
know what I mean? Well, and you can see sort of logistically, like the reasons why they're engaging in this story, because one of the biggest themes of the sequel trilogy is that it's the same thing as Darth Vader. It's like, is there good in him? Can he be saved? And it's more pronounced. So it's all been about like the people who believe Ben Solo's still in there. And, you know, first it was Han, and then in The Last Jedi, there was Leia making comments about it. And now, you know, if we believe that these trilogies, and I really love that point that each trilogy is sort of a conversation between two characters. I think it kind of fits the prequels if you look at it as a conversation between Obi-Wan and Anakin. Like it's sort of Obi-Wan's story all the way through, and him trying to ultimately save and fail to save Anakin. And so if this trilogy is going to the central relationship, not necessarily romantically, but the central, you know, light and dark relationship is Rey and Kylo, she's going to be the last one who thinks that Ben Solo's still in there, you know, like, so I think you can kind of see how they got there, and you know, your mileage may vary on whether you think that's a good thing, but you know, it's interesting.
Well, and the other thing I wanted to say to follow up on Dave's point about like we want a Star Wars that reflects the current war we're fighting. There's of course a lot of geopolitical wars that are going on, a lot of things, but like we are also as an American culture and maybe a global culture trapped in a culture war, right? And so this idea of Ben Solo, Kylo Ren as the like toxic fanboy is, you know, and Rose then be an example of like the optimistic fangirl is an interesting read, I think, on this trilogy being intersecting with the history of Star Wars as a story about like fandom wars, right? Because Kylo, you know, is a Darth Vader fanboy. He's like he's worshiping the old ways and turning a blind and or somewhat fascistic eye to like, you know, the way that the future is. The future is the multicultural throuple that is, you know, Finn and Poe and Rey. So like, that's a reading I really like. But I know it's a reading that enrages, you know, the some young men, you know.
I also like that reading, and in the sense that, you know, I think the big question of this sequel trilogy, the big question it's trying to answer is, where does the power really come from? And the arguments on the two sides are, does it come from your legacy? Is it Bloodborne, as the prequel trilogy has actually sort of told us? Or does it come from within you? Does it come from your belief and your hope and your goodness? You know, where does the power of the Force come from? Which I think is a super interesting question that, you know, and probably not the best for my beard bet if the power comes at random.
Well, that has to do with Rey's parentage, the big question of, I think, the sequel trilogy. And maybe get an answer, or maybe the answer doesn't matter. It's going to kind of depend on Rise of Skywalker, probably.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I had one more point to make before we move too far about the societal themes that we're dealing with. We're also, and this is something that I think George Lucas was interested in, you know, he was interested in the rise of fascism and the way that impacted the serials of the 30s and 40s and 50s. But there's also, we live in a time of significant inequality. So it really is almost this, like, the First Order is the ultimate personification of, like, the militarized wealth state. And the Resistance, as we are seeing it now especially, is down to, like, a bunch of poor people and a couple of old ass ships, you know? So, So I think
they're wildly recruiting out of Anaheim for some reason.
Right. So it, you know, it, so I think it speaks to the things that are on these filmmakers' minds: inequality, power dynamics between, genders. And it's interesting when you go back and watch all of them together, as I feel like I have in the last couple of weeks here. And, there is something extremely rich and nuanced. There's like this feels like an extra weight to the current trilogy because of the way we tell the complexity of modern stories. It's interesting that they have that, and it also just feels like a Star Wars movie all the time.
Yeah, I think like Force Awakens really moves at like a clip where like the first act of that movie is great. And it's only really by the time they get to, maybe by the time they get to Taco Donna, things slow down. Maybe the Wrath, depending on how much you like Han Solo and Wrath Tars in space and the Tell It to Kanji Club sequences. But like,
my only disappointment was that the dudes from the raid didn't get to do any of the stuff that they do that's awesome. They just got thrown around by a CGI squid guy thing.
That's true. I mean, the rumor is we'll never know. Well, maybe we will know. So, like, there was a sequence where the Millennium Falcon's door closed to Harrison Ford's leg, and everybody freaked out, and production closed down for 6 months, and they retooled the script in that time to sort of, like, tighten it up, make it better, and they restarted it, and they filmed Force Awakens, and it came out, and it was great, and for a while I thought we would never really actually learn what happened or what was going to happen in those sequences. Rumor is that you know, Wrath Tar sequence was expanded to be a little less intense to respond to Harrison Ford's healing leg. And the other part was a lot that was on the Capitol planet with Princess Leia talking to her Maisie Richardson Sellers played assistant and representation at the Capitol. And then some stuff also with Leia and Maz Kanata that, you know, sort of came out. That's going to be the basis for the Carrie Fisher being in Rise of Skywalker. So there's a period of time where, like the documentaries don't really mention it, and I thought it was just going to be, like, lost to history unless you remembered this actually happening. But it sounds like we might actually get to see what some of that could have been, or it'll be, like, the basis of countless YouTube videos in 2020, the various pieces of Carrie Fisher footage that could have been part of Force Awakens, but instead is going to land in Rise of Skywalker. Trivia. But yeah, it's a really like Star Wars-y paced movie, and then Last Jedi comes along and tries to like mimic the Empire pacing, but I'm just such a fan, even still rewatching it, of all the Octo stuff. I think it's a really interesting place to take Luke Skywalker's character, especially having, you know, access to the Legends novels where eventually, because the Skywalker blood is so important. So that's the interesting thing. When Legends went into this after Return of the Jedi thing, they took up the cue from the other Star Wars movies and they're like, the Skywalker blood's very important. So as things go on, the people who have to oppose Luke become like stronger and stronger until you have like a god-level Luke that could, you know, like, teleport and push people around anyway, regardless of the Last Jedi's developments, who's facing off against weird things like bug races that were once conquered by, like, a Sith creature. So there's, like, a bunch of them that could use the Force, or, like, you know, basically, like, Sith gods. And so it just rises the level of action and opponent to a level that it doesn't need, it can't sustain itself at. Not that Star Wars needs to sustain Luke Skywalker anymore, but that was always the idea. And that was sort of what makes Luke Skywalker abandoning the Force, because he sort of gets this wider view of the Jedi, such a powerful movement, is because it allows hero Luke Skywalker, I think, to live on at the end of The Last Jedi in a more meaningful way than if he had, you know, descended Force God-like and crushed all the AT-ATs with the power of his mind. But no, just needed to be good and needed to say something to Ben Solo before he passed off this earth.
And he needed to.
Came on with the Force.
This is one of the things I found from the commentary track on Last Jedi is, you know, Rian Johnson's interpretation of what Luke does at the end has always been that he is, he's obviously trying to tie up that loose end, but he's also helping reignite the hope of the galaxy. So, you know, it's Last Jedi to me feels like it's a conversation where Rey has to convince Luke to have a little bit of hope at this point, or to believe that the Force can be used in the right way. You know, because I think the Ben Solo thing sort of breaks Luke, and then so I think it's really, you know, it's sort of the it's fucking it, great. It,
there, I mean, yeah. So there are some arguments against The Last Jedi or The Force Awakens or both together that I can understand. Even if I don't share them, I can kind of understand where they're coming from. John Boyega is the latest to sort of like take a shot at The Last Jedi, which I'm like, John, please, just don't. Anyway. But the people who say that they don't think Rian Johnson's depiction of Luke makes Luke unheroic is something I really push back on, because for me, and for a lot of people, but like definitely for me, like watching someone lose their faith, isolate themselves, fall into a depression, all of this sort of stuff, and then find the will, inspired by a young apprentice, to fight back anyway. That's so heroic. And, like, who wants to watch an arc of like Luke figures it all out and Return of the Jedi and only gets stronger and climbs higher from there? What kind of story is that to tell? What a boring story. You know what I mean? And so like this idea and the other thing that I should say is like, it's not Rian's fault necessarily that this is the story of Luke, because the script he inherits, the Force Awakens script that he inherits, has Luke already absented himself, gone into hiding on Octo. And so like he's already pulled like an Obi-Wan or a Yoda, you know what I mean? So he's already like given up the fight. And so it's not like Rian is the one that made Luke like run away from the fight. Like that was something that he was given. And what he did with it, I think, is fascinating and really, really good and really inspiring. And I think it's especially inspiring to people like myself who have like struggled with depression and feelings of defeat and feelings of imposter syndrome and failure and all this sort of stuff like that. And this like healing aspect of The Last Jedi, where Yoda is just like, failure? Kidding? Like, failure's great. Like, come on. But it's fine. You still got it. Let's go. You know, and with that lighthearted, like, Yoda chuckle of, like, all of this, it's enormously healing and enormously inspiring. And there's things about The Last Jedi that I don't love. I don't love a lot of the Canto Bight stuff, but like there's so much that I do love that like the stuff that I do love is so great that it makes it one of my favorite Star Wars movies. So.
Yeah, it's pretty damn good.
Yeah, I like Force Awakens because, you know, it shoots us off in a new direction, but Last Jedi has like this structure to it that's very tight. So even though I could feel the things that I'm missing, like I want more like Finn and Rose, and I want maybe like a second scene with Poe in his transition from understanding what a leader is to just being like a leader, but I can't. It lays the groundwork for those scenes to exist, you know, like in my mind. Which, you know, isn't a great excuse, but maybe it is for Star Wars. Maybe if you're making a Star Wars in a world where you know that someone's going to write the novel about the fucking Force tree, and, you know, like someone's going to write the novel about the fish people on Octo, and there definitely has been a Canto Bight novel already. Like maybe you push people in the idea, in the direction of that idea, and hope it gets picked up.
I mean, I just,
who knows?
Yeah. I think that, this idea of the second installment being a low point for so many characters, I mean, that's an obvious thing to do in a trilogy, right? Is to like, you got to have your heroes winning and then losing and then to only come back and win again, you know? And Empire does that in that like, Hans and Carbonite and our heroes are on the run and Luke has lost a hand and like, you know, things are dire and we got to figure it out. Like all of that is true, but it doesn't show them at their low lows. You know what I mean? And their low lows don't come from, and I love Empire. I'm not knocking Empire, but they don't come from like their own personality flaws, which is the psychological experiment that Rian Johnson used to write the script is like, what would be the hardest thing for all of these characters to face emotionally, psychologically, right? You know what I mean? And so like Leia's boyfriend goes into Carbonite and that's really sucks. But like her worldview, her like world beliefs are not questioned or challenged in any way, in a way that she needs to come back from and to be even stronger in the third movie. But that's what The Last Jedi does, is it forces all of these people to reckon with, these flaws if flaws feels too judgmental, these lessons that they still need to learn. I love that what it does with Poe. Cause you watch the first one, you're like, Poe, oh yeah, cocky flyboy, I love him so much. And then you watch the second one and you're like, oh no, wait, he has some things to learn and he needs to get knocked on his ass, in order to learn it. And then, you know, we can rejoice in the lessons he will have learned in this and the growth he will have made by the time the third movie rolls around, you know, theoretically.
Mm-hmm. And I think what's really interesting and what really ultimately makes it brilliant to me is that it also still has the poetry or the rhymes from the original trilogy. Cause I mean, even if you think about the Luke story, it's not that far from what happened to Obi-Wan. You know, it's George Lucas sort of scratched at that a little bit. And in this sequel trilogy, especially in Last Jedi, it's basically like, we're going to take the things that rhyme, but we're going to think deeply about them and we're going to explore them in a way that feels more lived in for our world. Like the stories we get now are so much more complex than what they were making in the 70s, you know, as far as like big budget movies. So I think that's, you know, it's a more thoughtful version, but the fact that it rhymes makes it feel familiar, and the thoughtfulness, I think, takes it to the next level.
It's going to be interesting to see how coming up. Actually, I want to do a little bit about expectations for Rise of Skywalker before I go out, but I think we have a quote from Neil about divisive Star Wars.
Well, this is perfect. So this is a quote that I grabbed from the Empire Strikes Back commentary, which, to add a little context, was recorded in like 2004. So this was right as the last of the prequels were coming out. And this is Ben Burtt, who is the sound designer from the original Star Wars. He created all the sounds for all the blasters and lightsabers and R2-D2s and everything that you love when you hear it. And it's him talking about the way people felt about Empire right as it came out. And I thought that it was, it sort of makes sense. So let's give that a listen.
It's funny, you know, people always say that now. They look comment about, you know, Empire being a favorite. Yet at the time, it was not considered that. You have to think back, you know, how sort of capricious the world of entertainment is, you know, in terms of the audience response. You know, the first film came out, New Hope, and it was extremely well received, surprised everyone. It, you know, it had all the success of something brand new for the first time. Then you do a sequel, The Empire Strikes Back, and people's expectations now are very high. They remember how they reacted to the first film. And Empire is paced differently, and it's a darker story. And it doesn't have a complete resolution at the end. It leaves things undone. And when it came out, there was a lot of reaction of disappointment. There wasn't this judgment that it was the best of the three films or anything of that sort. It was a success, of course, and it was, you know, respected. But people spoke less of it. There was kind of, you know, well, it's okay, I guess. And, you know, it wasn't quite what I was hoping for. It was sort of the attitude. Given time, you look back at this middle act, which is The Empire Strikes Back, and it takes on a different context. You know, you see the good performances. You're not bothered by the lack of resolution in the story completely. It's satisfying. And you know that it's part of a greater story. And you're not just measuring against the impact the first film had. I think when they're all done and, you know, 10 years go by, maybe sort of put them all together and look at it, maybe it'll take on some new meaning. that we don't know about yet. I think it will.
So what I love about this quote is that, you know, you could insert The Last Jedi for where he says the Empire Strikes Back, and you still have the elements of people's expectations were very high coming off The Force Awakens. But then you get this movie that it's paced differently. It's darker. It's like we've been talking about, more thoughtful, more, you know, it's not just sort of the fresh feeling, and you sort of come down from that high. And it's really hard, I think, when you're living through a moment in history, to step back and sort of reflect on the moment you're living through. So right now we're in that spot. We're in the spot where people didn't know what to make of Star Wars after Empire came out. And we're in sort of a similar but heightened state in The Last Jedi was such a different movie. You know, it had such a different feel to it and had so many things to say that it's probably shouldn't have come to a surprise that it would be sort of a divisive film. And I think that we have to be open to it having a ton more context after next week, literally next week when we see the new one. So I think that's the way I'm trying to approach it is, no matter what you thought about The Last Jedi, it's only part two of a three-part thing that's so many people have dedicated a lot of time planning how those three stories are going to fit together. So, you know, just a little historical context. People weren't super into Empire back in the day either.
Definitely. And in response to that, us not knowing the whole story, I'm going to push our Rank the Trilogy movies to the end of our calm section next week, when we can actually rank the trilogy rather than doing a two film stack here. And instead ask you guys, what are your hopes for the rise of Skywalker? Like, obviously not plot hopes, but the emotional hopes, you know, like I'm concerned about J.J. Abrams, fantastic creator of Beginnings and Mysteries, landing both the personal scope of this trilogy and this Skywalker saga term that's been placed on the whole 9 movies. So, like,
they certainly are. Every featurette that comes out, every like behind the scenes thing, they're really building it up. Like, this is the last of the Skywalker trilogy or the Skywalker films, and it's like, damn, that's a lot of pressure to put on yourselves, but they right. seem to really like, believe in what they're doing.
Do I want like a Yub Nub celebration sequence? Because I wouldn't if it was just the end of the sequel trilogy. That would seem like a little premature for celebration, but I do if it's the end of the Skywalker saga, because it seems like we should get our Yub Nub on.
We should get a party.
Bum, yeah. Bum, bum, bum. What do you think, Joanna? What are you looking forward to, hopefully?
I just want everyone to like it. And then we don't have to fight online about it, and we could just be friends, and like people can get excited about like BB-8 toys or whatever. I guess that's what Baby Yoda is. I don't know. But like, I just think about the winter of 2015 and like what a joy I remember it being. I saw The Force Awakens like 4 or 5 times in the theaters, and everyone had seen it, and everyone was talking about it, and everyone wanted to talk about BB-8 and like Rey and Finn and Kylo, and everything was so exciting, and like Harrison Ford was back in the franchise, and oh my god. And then 2017, you know, no coincidence, I think, that 2015 was like President Obama. In 2017, we're like still like licking our wounds from Trump or whatever, and then like this awful Star Wars fight happens in the winter of 2017, and it just like was such a bummer. Even though I loved The Last Jedi, it was such a toxic time to be talking about the film, and it still is. You still like can't interact with Rian Johnson even on Twitter without like hundreds of weirdos being like, yeah, we're all in my childhood. I'm like, Jesus, you like, you dislike the movie, that's fine, leave Rian Johnson alone, it's been so long. So I would just like it to be middle of the road enough that the people who are, and not to say that they want, the people who didn't like The Last Jedi need middle of the road, but like generically crowd pleasing enough that the people who were mad can enjoy it, but not so generically crowd-pleasing that the people who liked The Challenge of the Last Jedi will be dissatisfied. That is an impossible ask, but that's what I would like from The Last Jedi.
It's weird because I kind of want the opposite of that. I want it to be weird and complex and frustrating for the same sort of people that were frustrated by The Last Jedi. because I don't care about their feelings necessarily, given their behavior. So
I don't care about their feelings. I just think it's more fun when we all right. are having a good time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, I exist in a very safe space where I get to interact with folks who are part of our small council and Patreon, patreon.com/stormofspoilers. So that's where most of my discussion is going to happen. But I do. Your larger point is a good one. It would be nice if we could unite around liking The Rise of Skywalker as much as we have united around defending Baby Yoda with our lives.
I'm going to say I want a conclusion that makes me feel good but provides no definitive answers. Because then we could have friendly debate until they decide whatever the hell is going on with Star Wars after this. Man, like, could you imagine taking all the focus that has been on Star Wars since 2015 and then being like, all you have to look forward to is Mandalorian Season 2 sometime in the near future? Because that's about to happen. That's going to be the world you live in like 4 months from now.
We need a post-credit scene that leads to a trilogy we didn't even see coming.
Remember, no, I don't remember what I was going to say. Oh, yeah. Okay, remember, Dave, how you just said like you wanted like friendly fighting, right?
Yeah.
Something we discovered, I feel like we conclusively discovered in Colorado is that fighting is David Gonzalez's love language. So if he's fighting with you on the internet in some way or another, he probably loves you too. So, you know, just take it.
Or he at least loves Star Wars.
He loves something.
It goes lots of ways, you know. You know,
he's fighting
about art is great. I love you all. Batman versus Superman is a trash film.
He's fighting to defend what he loves. So, you know,
shoot with your heart. All right. We are going to go to a couple of different segments to pass this Bechdel test this week, right after this.
Getting out of the rut and staying creative is easier said than done, especially with a busy schedule. Maybe you want to get back into an old passion or learn something new. Build. Fuel and expand your creative fire with Skillshare.
Skillshare is an online learning community for the creator in all of us. They have thousands of classes in photography and creative writing to design, productivity, web design, graphic design, and more. Their classes are on demand, so you could learn at your own pace. Get inspired, join a class, and create something you'll love.
Ooh, there's a section in here for learning how to do animation. Like if I wanted to do like a shot for shot animated, poorly animated remake of like the Rise of Skywalker trailer, which I think is a fun little hobby that I could have.
And then you could learn how to do film and editing, so you could edit your animations into your remake.
Yeah, you got animation, you've got film and editing, you've got graphic design, you could design all of your own posters. Basically, you could become a one-person film studio just by doing stuff with Skillshare.
You know, I love those movies that are like a shot-by-shot-for-shot remake of whatever. You know what I mean? Right? There was mm-hmm. Indiana
weren't they called Sweeted at one point?
Oh, yeah. Be kind, rewind.
Somebody sent me a Sweeted version of the Rise of Skywalker trailer, and it was absolutely delightful. And
so make your
all
own.
Kinds of fun stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a bunch of cool like cinematography classes. Like you can make it and make it beautiful using just your phone, thanks to Skillshare. So let Skillshare be the spark that'll light the fire, that'll burn your creativity across the galaxy, something like that. So join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare and get 2 months free when you sign up at Skillshare.com/thestorm. That's 2 whole months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. Get started today by heading to Skillshare.com/thestorm to sign up. That's Skillshare.com/thestorm. All right. right, now is the time on the podcast where we send the boys away. And it is just me, Joanna Robinson, and just my guest, Lindsay Romaine. Hello, Lindsay. How are you?
I am doing very well. Thank you for having me back.
Lindsay, as you know, is my most Star Wars... I mean, I'm going to give you a place above Dave. Don't tell Dave I said this, even though he's editing this. Like, you are... Well, at least for this current trilogy, the sequel trilogy, you are my, like, most Star Wars knowledgeable nerdy friend. It's possible that Dave has read more expanded universe novels than you. I don't want to put anyone up against that, but... you are my go-to, and I'm so excited to talk to you about this sequel trilogy, The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi, and The Rise of Skywalker. But we also wanted to walk back a little bit and talk a little bit about the prequels, because we didn't have you on for that episode because I lost my voice completely. So as much as the world probably could have used a Lindsay Romaine monologue on the prequels, we did not have a segment there. So let's start here. Let's talk about how... you feel like the prequel trilogy specifically will inform this final sequel trilogy, has already informed, and then will inform, like, once we've all seen The Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of parallels back, like, in the prequel trilogy. It's funny, like, I was never huge, like, I didn't hate the prequels with the sort of, you know, intensity that some people do growing up, but, like, I think the sequel trilogy has made me go back and appreciate them a little bit more, because I do think that there's shades of Anakin and Kylo's story, and definitely one of the things that is really prominent, you know, if we're getting into the Reylo of it all right away, this is the Reylo trilogy, as you guys refer to it, as the sequel trilogy. I do think that there's a lot of like fan theories about the parallels between Padme and Anakin's story and Rey and Kylo's story in particular. So I think that's something that is super interesting to me, whether or not it's intentional on behalf of the creators or not. I don't know, but it's something that's like really fun to graph onto some of that.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. Do you feel like people who don't connect with that story, like what can they be like digging into about that story that maybe they should take a second look at in terms of Amidala and all of that?
Yeah, so there's this fan theory kind of propagated by the Reylos that's called Reverse Amidala, which is basically saying that Rey and Kylo's quote-unquote love story in the sequel trilogy is the inverse of Padme and Anakin's love story in the prequel trilogy, which is basically that, you know, in the prequel trilogy, Anakin starts from a place of light and is swayed towards the darkness. And, you know, it's out of his love for Padme that he kind of leads to his downfall, really, and his obsession with conquering death and all of the things that lead to the destruction of the Jedi Order. And then you have the inverse of that in the sequel trilogy, which is we're starting from a place where the Jedi Order has been destroyed once again and darkness exists within Kylo Ren. And it's sort of his coming back to the light, if that's how you choose to see it, and if that's what happens, and maybe Rey's role in that. So there's a lot more, like, if you really like dig into the Reverse Amidala stuff online, there's so many amazing like theories and stuff that I'm only kind of like getting to that's like the top tier of all the like great analysis that people have done. But that's really like made me more interested in the story of the prequels, for sure.
It's interesting to me. I want to ask you this, and I don't want to offend anyone who's like really into it, but I think it's worth discussing that some people find the Reylo ship, you know, problematic because they see, you know, the way that Kylo Ren treats Rey when he first meets her and all this sort of stuff is like extremely abusive and toxic, especially in The Last Jedi, some very like toxic negging sort of stuff going on. Do you find it easy to sort of, or not easy, but do you find it useful to think of, if you think of Ben Solo and Kylo Ren as completely different individuals, is that make it easier to think about that? Or what is your take on that sort of backlash to the Reylo shipping?
Yeah, I think it's really complicated because it is. I mean, I don't want to invalidate anybody who sees the toxic elements there. I do think that that's a genuine read on some of those moments between them. I compartmentalize it in like different ways. I think maybe I do see them as different characters. They're not even different Ben and Kylo, I mean, as different characters. I don't know if I see them as different characters so much as I see Kylo Ren as the result of someone who's been very sort of brainwashed and abused, if you want to go off of like some of the canon comics, by this character of Snoke, who we learn has really been kind of putting hooks in him since he was very young. And, you know, people who are abused use abusive language, and it's something that you have to unlearn. So I think that kind of goes hand in hand with some of his, you know, again, if the redemption arc of it all kind of plays out, that's if he's on that path, that's like hoping that that behavior is corrected. But yeah, I don't know. I think it definitely gets very heated online, and I never want to, like, you know, with the Reylo ship, I never want to like invalidate what other people bring to that, because I know a lot of people that just really can't see past that, and I think that's fair.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's complicated, and I think not to use language that our president has completely warped, but I see both sides of the argument. And as much as I like, I do emotionally feel the Reylo thing, even though like I feel it. So like The Last Jedi, you and I have both written about the horniness of The Last Jedi as a film. Thank you, Rian Johnson, for our very horny Star Wars. But like, the horniness of it is there. The sexuality of it is there. But there's just like a power of the Rey and Kylo connection as Force users that I think is strong in the same way that like the Vader and Luke connection is strong. That it's like even beyond the like romantic or sexual aspect of it, which I think is there. But even if that's something you have a problem with, that the desire to see them either fight each other or fight other people together, like the two of them sabers out, like that is the driving power of this franchise as far as I'm concerned. Like, do you have any thoughts about that, about like if there's something there for people even if they don't like ship these two characters, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think we're seeing like through this Force bond something that we've never really seen before, which is these two characters who didn't even know each other really as this was all getting started, and who are like suddenly have this connection that's so like, you know, it crosses galaxies, basically their ability to see one another and communicate with one another. And they're also, you know, even if you don't bring in the romantic angle, they're characters that kind of are on like these polar opposite journeys that are also weirdly similar. Like Rey comes from nothing. She's very isolated. She grew up without parents. She grew up without any privilege or any like structures of safety. And Kylo Ren was the exact opposite, where he was raised by royalty and he was seen as sort of this prodigy. And I think both of those experiences are really lonely in different ways. And so I think that loneliness is like where their connection is the most strong.
Yeah, I think Adam Driver has given a number of interviews about this, one of them to Vanity Fair, but about like, imagine if you are the child of two of the most famous people in the galaxy, that can be an incredibly, incredibly lonely and isolating experience.
Yeah.
And like throw in a super famous uncle, as well. And, you know, yeah, you've got this really like lonely existence. And so you see things like the Knights of Ren, which is, you know, the group that Kylo sort of like falls into when he leaves Luke, as like this is his first taste of family, even if it's like a warped and toxic family. It's like, he doesn't feel alone. You know what I mean? He's got these little clone imitator followers sort of thing.
Yeah, he's got his little cult. Yeah, I do.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I do almost really see him as sort of like someone who gets swayed into a cult, you know, the like weird like programming that goes into something like that is weirdly like something that we see in him, which is, yeah, he feels really isolated, alone, doesn't have his path. We learn from some of the canon stuff that really he's been kind of left alone by his parents. So it's natural that he's just looking for family, kind of the same way Rey is. He just ended up stumbling upon a really dark side of things instead of like Finn and Poe like Rey. So
yes, like there but for Finn and Poe, could like Rey have gone, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like exactly. Yeah. And then I want to talk to you, we're going to get into some of the other characters, but I want to talk to you first about Princess Leia, General Leia, Carrie Fisher. We talked a little bit about this during the original trilogy episode, but you know, the intentionality around this upcoming film, Rise of Skywalker, was that this would be the Leia episode. If Luke's was The Last Jedi and Han's was The Force Awakens, this would be Leia's film. We know that they tried to work Leia in as much as possible, but, like, you know, not wanting to, sully anyone's memory, did not go, like, you know, there were limits to how much they could do with the footage that JJ had existing of Carrie Fisher. So that being said, they had to rewrite the film in order to accommodate for that. What is your sense, without getting into, like, spoilers of what we do know about The Rise of Skywalker, what is your sense of, like, what Leia's story could have been in this film had Carrie Fisher been alive for the shooting of it?
I think it would have been something similar to what Han and Luke's roles were in The Force Awakens and Last Jedi, respectively. Like, I think it would have been something where she was kind of, had something to do with Rey's arc, definitely, and also something to do with Kylo's arc. And in both of the first two sequel trilogy movies, you know, we see Han sort of play mentor to Rey and then ultimately sacrifice himself for the goodness of his son, whether you see it as a sacrifice or not. I guess I kind of do just thematically, but, like, yeah, he goes to his son and sort of dies for him. And then we see something similar in The Last Jedi with Luke, which is that I don't know if he's so much a mentor figure to Rey, but he's definitely, like, somebody who she talks to about legacy and whatnot, and somebody who clearly has a huge influence on her. And then he, you know, comes back and he doesn't fully sacrifice himself for Kylo, but I think that that's part of it. I think Leia's role probably would have been something similar, but maybe with a slightly more hopeful ending instead of what happens with the two men, which is maybe that, you know, she would have been a mentor to Rey, and together they would have factored into whatever becomes of Ben Solo.
Yeah, it would have been nice to have, like, one of those legacy characters not die before the film is over, but I don't know how they handle the Leia of it all without having that character pass away if you have limited, you know, access to Carrie Fisher footage. So we'll see.
There's also, yeah. I mean, even within the trailer, like, I've just always suspected that, yeah, her fate might be sealed in this one. I just, from the very first trailer, when we hear Luke presumably saying to Rey in a voiceover, like, we've passed on all we know, to me that, like, always implied that Leia was somehow crossed over and, like, also, you know, doing that, but who knows?
All right, so then I want to do a thing with you that I just sprung on you, so we'll see how we do. But we understand to a certain degree how Rey and Kylo fit into the dark side, light side sort of push and pull that's been happening throughout the franchise. But I want to talk about some of these surrounding characters and how their stories connect to the, you know, into this 9-film saga. So let's start with Finn. Like, how do you see Finn in these 3 movies? Once again, Lindsay and I have not seen the 3rd movie yet, but, like, how do you see Finn's story echoing what's come before in Star Wars?
I've always seen him as the Han character of this, you know, new trilogy. I know it's the exact, like, parallels are a little bit different. They come from different things, but both of them have, like, narratives where they're having to learn to fight for a larger cause than just them. You know, in the first Star Wars, Han's totally in it for himself, just like Finn is totally in it for himself, really, in The Force Awakens. And then in the Empire Strikes Back, we see Han sort of decide to join, you know, he almost runs away and then he decides to kind of double down and pledge himself to the Rebel Alliance. And then by the 3rd one, he's fully a member. I feel like that's almost exactly what kind of happens with Finn in broad strokes. So, you know, The Last Jedi is about him learning to not just want to, like, save him and Rey and get out of stuff, but, like, him learning to pledge himself to the Resistance. So, yeah, I don't know exactly how that will play out in The Rise of Skywalker, but I imagine, you know, we see him sort of fighting with the Resistance. So I imagine, yeah, he's fully a part of it. And yeah, it seems the most similar to Han to me.
I agree with you. I didn't, like, of all this, I love The Last Jedi. You know that I'm a lover of The Last Jedi, but, like, the Canto Bight stuff does not work super well for me. And I do wish that Finn and Rose, who's a character I like, had a story that I loved more than I wound up loving. And that being said, I think it is really useful to separate Finn and Rey in that middle film so that you do see that Finn's story is connected not just to his like crush on Rey or friendship with Rey or whatever it is, but it's to this other thing. Like, he has to make that choice, and it has to have like as little to do with Rey as possible. And I think that that's interesting.
Yeah, I completely agree. I also, like, I do agree with the Canto Bight stuff. I also obviously love The Last Jedi, but I do think, like, Finn's story suffered the most from the sort of, like, necessary picking up where the last one left off-ness of it all, if that makes sense. Like, you know, The Force Awakens kind of forces it so that, like, The Last Jedi has to pick up, like, where that movie left off, because we're literally, like, on a cliff. Like, what's happening with Luke Skywalker? You can't have that time jump really there that you can have in the other movies. And so, like, Finn had to wake up in that moment and still not really be, like, rooted to anything. And I do think, yeah, it kind of creates a rushed narrative for him, and maybe not the most elegant one. But, yeah, I think ultimately it comes, it lands him in a place where he needs to be for this last one.
All right, let's talk about Finn's BFF, Poe Dameron. how do you see Poe's story connecting to the larger franchise?
Well, I think if Finn is Han, then Poe has to be Leia, right?
for making that parallel. Okay. When you said Finn was Han, I was like, what are we gonna do for Poe? Because Poe has always been Han. I'm like making a little chart on my notes in front of me. So got a little arrow between Poe and Leia. Okay, so Poe is Leia. How so? Hit me with it.
Well, I've never actually saw Poe as Han. I think he gets like compared to him just because they're both like pilots and have swagger, but I think like from a story perspective, that doesn't really line up. Like when we meet Poe, he is like firmly in the resistance. He's like, you know, what does Holdo call him? Like a trigger happy flyboy. He's like such a like poster child really of this thing, and very dedicated. And that's where we meet Leia at the beginning of Star Wars. You know, she's fully in the Rebel Alliance and fighting for them. Maybe doesn't have the same arrogance, but she has kind of that swagger and like snapback attitude that he has a little bit too. Uh-huh. And yeah, and then I think The Last Jedi kind of maybe doesn't fully track with like Leia's story onward, but I just think like he, you know, we meet him as somebody who's really pledged to this rebel cause, and that's similar to Leia. And he also kind of comes from like a more like background associated with stuff like Leia. Like he, in the comics, you find out that his parents were friends of Leia and like fought with her. So he was kind of born in this resistance, and so was Leia to a certain degree. You know, she was born to Bail Organa, who, they're not born to him, but, you know, raised by him. And right. He was somebody who was instrumental in the formation of the Rebel Alliance. So, yeah, I think they're both just kind of come from these resistance roots. And yeah, it's there's how they progress from that.
All right. Love that. All right. Let's go to Rose. What do we see? Even if she doesn't have like a direct analog or whatever, but maybe you have one locked and loaded, but even if she doesn't, like, what is her story? Like, how is it echo through the franchise?
Yeah, I don't know that I think she has like a character analog like that. And I don't know that any of these people are like exact character analogs, but yeah, I don't know that she is somebody who you can like fit into a mold of somebody that we've seen before. But I think she to me has always been like the Star Wars fangirl, like sort of inserted into the movies. And I mean that as a compliment. Uh-huh. It's somebody who's like read all of the stuff about Star Wars and is suddenly like thrown into the story and gets to basically like be the meta character about like what they know about Star Wars. So she kind of says all of the lines that are things that we as fans like have always thought about the thing. I mean, some fans don't like what she says, but I think they, not to get into that, but maybe have a misunderstanding of like what the story's been telling us all along, which is stuff like, you know, it's not about like fighting what you hate, it's about saving what you love. She just has these kind of beautiful little messages, and she's the one that steers Finn like on the right path. She's maybe an insert character, but I think in a really positive way, and kind of represents that type of fan girl who has all that enthusiasm for these characters and just wants them to be good and do better.
Yeah, it's interesting to me, and I think that lines up with what Ryan, like the thing that Rian Johnson said. I think it's in the documentary. Was it The Director and the Jedi? Is that what that's called?
Yeah.
I believe it was in that he's just said like Rose is modeled on like my friends. Like she's very recognizably girls that I've been friends with, and I wanted to put that girl who is like a personality type that I really like and have so much affection for. I wanted to put that girl into a Star Wars, and like that to me is forever like what a beautiful gift to. And I think if we do sit and think about it, we all know Rose is. into our lives, especially those of us who are listening right now to a podcast about Star Wars. And, you know, so for her to be a character and be an important character, in Star Wars is a real gift to the fan community. And that, I mean, and then of course, like that makes the way in which she was, rejected by some shitty corners of the fan community that much more frustrating. And then the way in which she's been heartily embraced by other corners, that much more heartwarming. So, there we go. Rose, I'm really excited to see what she has to do in this final film. All right, let's move to my favorite fascist and yours, Hux, my boy Hux. where do we see Hux fitting in to the larger Star Wars story?
Yeah, I think, well, when he started off, I remember, like, at the, was it at Comic-Con or whatever, when he talked about being, like, a humorless British type, which is, like, sort of all of the Empire members that we saw in the original trilogy. So I think, like, initially, maybe his most direct, like, analog would be, like, a Tarkin, somebody who's also maybe, like, the face we see most besides Vader in Empire. And yeah, somebody who's just sort of there to sort of brush against our main villain and yeah, give him some sassy things to do. But I think that's that again, like the, not to like go down the Last Jedi, like subverted so many expectations things, but I think the Last Jedi like really made Hux pretty pathetic in a way that I think was necessary, like make fascists pathetic. But
yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know exactly like where I think like thematically he fits into the story, but I do love having him as like a foil to Kylo. I just think the relationship's really funny. Yeah.
I watched the because I don't know, I started because actually, yeah, your friend and mine, Jacob Hall, wrote this great tweet thread about Luke. And so then I decided to like, yes, and his tweet thread and also write about Luke. And then that kicked up like, I knew what was going to happen, obviously. You know, and I had to like mute a bunch of like abusive people talking about how much I love Luke in The Last Jedi, how much he means to me in The Last Jedi. But so, you know, in honor of that, I just rewatched the final confrontation between Kylo and Luke because I find it so powerful for a number of reasons. I find the way that Adam Driver plays Kylo as like such a child in that sequence so powerful. I find like everything that Luke is doing so powerful. But then like in that sequence, you also get Hux just like thrown against the wall like a like a complete rag doll. It's just like poor Bud. He is comic relief even in like the hardcore emotional climax of the movie. I mean, not poor fascist. That's, you know, we don't need to feel sorry for him. But yeah, it's I do love what Rian Johnson did with Hux a lot. And so we'll see how that all plays out.
Yeah, I'm surprised Hux made it this long, honestly. Like, I expected him to die even as soon as like he was first like mentioned as being like a First Order member in this movie. I was like, oh, he'll be dead by like the end of Force Awakens.
Why hasn't he been force choked yet, you know?
Yeah,
exactly. All right, and then I just want to hit a couple new characters before we get to the last character I want to talk about, which I think, well, maybe you won't be surprised by because maybe you know more about Star Wars than I do, but I am saving one for last. We're going to go with Zori Bliss, who is Keri Russell's character, who is like obviously like a little bit of like a Boba Fett-esque character because we've got like this cool like masked you know, bounty hunter-esque character. But what, like, you know, without any spoilers, given what we know about Zori, her relationship with Poe, etc., how do you see her fitting into the larger story?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we know a little bit that they've kind of fed to us in like brief little bits, which is, yeah, that she has some kind of association with Poe in the past. I don't know. She's like maybe the biggest question mark for me headed into this movie. Like, we don't really know anything about her besides like what planet we find her on. Yeah, in terms of like how she fits into the movies that have come before, I don't really know because she's such a like question mark for me. So knowing that she has some sort of like influence on Poe's past and maybe will like shade in the colors of his characterization, yeah, I don't know. I hadn't given that one too much thought. I'm sure like once we see it, there might be something. But yeah, I guess there's just this like idea of like a masked character who is in there that is very Boba Fett. It's kind of Mandalorian, you know, where like this idea of like someone's body language being the expression of who they are is probably like the most that we know about her. So yeah, I'll be interested to see. I'll also be really interested to see if she like keeps the mask on the whole time or not.
Because we haven't seen her mask off in the film yet, right?
Yeah, no. And I don't know if it, I don't know if it'll be like a Phasma type thing where maybe like we see like a little bit of her eye and that's it, or if we never see her at all, who knows?
Because if anyone can pull off like kind of sweaty helmet hair, I feel like it's Carrie Russell. You know what
absolutely.
I mean?
I feel like we've seen it in like I can just like picture the Americans who are like taking off like a motorcycle helmet or something.
Or even like a wig, and you're like, how does your hair look that good under a wig? God damn it.
True.
All right, so sorry, Bliss. Yeah, I was kind of thinking like maybe also a little bit if Poe has some like Han-esque qualities at all in being a, you know, swagger filled flyboy, like her as a Lando type figure, like someone from the past who's coming in, like, you know, and has, you know, maybe we don't know exactly what side this person's playing for, but their connection to one of our core heroes connects them to the hero's journey that we're all on, sort of thing. So
I love that.
But speaking of Lando, let's zoom over to this character, Janna, who a lot of people are wondering is like genetically related to Lando. But of course, that's what people thought about John Boyega's character, because they're like, a black person in Star Wars. Are they related to Lando? So anyway, Janna, who it once is another mysterious figure. We've seen her riding space horses with Finn. And not much else. So, based on not much else that we officially know about Janna, do you have any thoughts about how she connects to the larger franchise?
Yeah, I really don't. I mean, this is going to sound like a very weird comparison to make, and it literally just jumped into my head. But like, because she's like on a horse and like seems to have some kind of tribe, I wonder if like her function will be almost like the Ewoks. Ooh. Not that she's like is an Ewok, but I just mean like story wise, like somebody who kind of who comes in and is like maybe from this like native tribe of whatever planet they go to, and like, you know, helps defeat the Empire. I have no idea. That's me just pulling a parallel out. I'm like, who in the last movie do we meet who, like, the last movie of a trilogy do we meet who, like, focuses the story that way? But,
well, and I don't think that's unfair, because I think it's useful to remember that, you know, one of the biggest critique, I love The Force Awakens, but one of the biggest critiques of The Force Awakens is that JJ tried a little too hard to sort of, like, beat for beat match A New Hope. And so I think we can, you know, as much as there are Empire Strikes Back elements to The Last Jedi, the second installment, like, you know, our hero goes off to not a swamp planet, but a foggy, rocky island to train with a Jedi master sort of thing. Like, you know, that there are parallels, but it's not, it, you can't accuse The Last Jedi of being like beat for beat Empire Strikes Back. But I think we might be back on beat-to-beat territory. You know, because I think they, you know, given all the controversy, I think they're wanting to be safe in this final installment, or safer, or what have you. I can understand how they might be operating from a little bit of a place of fear in this final chapter, given the fan backlash. Do you have any thoughts on that at all?
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely, I mean, it is JJ, and I don't mean to just be like, well, it's JJ for you, but I do think, like, he does have some patterns in his filmography that can make us maybe, you know, especially in Star Wars, like, make us think that he might go down a really familiar path. And, like, I think that's also justified just given what we've seen in the trailers, which is that literally we see the Death Star 2 again, right, and literally Palpatine's throne room again, and literally Palpatine is in the movie again. So, like, yeah, there's a lot of reasons why I think there will probably be a lot of Return of the Jedi callbacks, parallels, whatever. And I mean, the Janna stuff also, like, she might literally be on Endor. They might literally be on Endor when they're, like, looking for the ruins. So, yeah, I don't know. That was my off-the-cuff kind of comparison for her. But, yeah, I think, like, more than anything, I feel like we've seen her so much in the marketing stuff with John Boyega.
Right.
So, yeah, maybe they, not necessarily, I am trying to think, I was listening to this really great podcast called Sky Talkers, and one of their hosts had a theory that maybe they're from the same planet, and like, not necessarily, you know, two black people in Star Wars are related, but maybe you're from the same place, and we're maybe both, because we know that like stormtrooper children were stolen from their families and basically raised as stormtroopers. Maybe she's also an escaped stormtrooper from the same place that he was. I don't know. I think that there will be like maybe a sense of family between them, even if it's not literal.
Excellent. And then I think I've saved the hardest new character for last, because I think we know the least about him, which is, oh gosh, I forget his military title. Pride. What is it? Is like,
Oh gosh, yeah,
Admiral or like something yeah. like that. I'll look it up anyway. what do you think of this character, Allegiant General Pride, played right. by Richard E. Grant?
I was like, I know generals in there somewhere, but I couldn't remember exactly. Yeah, I don't. I mean, he's the one that like he just gave an interview where he said that he modeled himself after Peter Cushing in A New Hope. So he's definitely like angling for that. Again, another humorless British type. Yeah, I have no idea about this character. I assume like, yeah, that he'll have something to do with the First Order, but who knows, maybe he'll have something to do with Palpatine. We know that there's like these Sith troopers and there's a lot of like stuff going on. Even like from stuff I've read, I still just like really have no idea where this character fits into anything. So yeah, I don't know what his presence will be in this, but I do know that I'm really freaking delighted to see Richard E. Grant in a Star Wars movie, like whatever the case may be. Do you have an idea of like a character parallel for him?
No, zero, other than Tarkin, obviously. Like, yeah, I got nothing. I think there was like I remember. So, okay, a little backstory, and this is all safe to talk about. I had to think for a second. when I do anything for Vanity Fair around Star Wars, I get to see the photos first. And then, like, that's the first thing that I get to see. And then I get to see, like, some of the cover story and stuff like that. But the first thing I get to see is the photos. And they usually don't have captions on them. So, like, we don't, and then we have to, like, slowly pry those captions away from Lucasfilm because, you know, sometimes we get to reveal character names and that's a big deal. And it's like, it's this whole thing. So we didn't know his name, yet when I first saw his photo. I did know that there was like a theory that he might be Hux's dad. And then you get that photo. I don't know if you guys remember the photo of Hux and Pride that's in Star Wars, but it's just like cheekbone, like this whole thing. And you're just like, yes, I can see it. So I like crafted this whole like article that I planned to write. And I still may write it after I see what actually happens in Rise about like the bad dads of Star Wars. And I was like, oh, here we come, another bad dad of Star Wars sort of thing. And then they're like, LOL, his name isn't Hux. And I'm like, okay, well, never mind. But
also Hux's dad is in the canon novels. Right. Yeah.
But they thought like, I think there was a theory that like maybe did he die in the canon novels?
I don't remember.
Well, that's the thing. I think people thought he was playing that character, like the character,
right?
The canon character.
Okay, yeah. I was gonna say, I think he's still alive. Yeah, Brendel Hux.
Good old Brendel Hux, and he's not. And so you know, there goes my bad dad theory. But that was like for a while, and maybe he's just gets to do like fun fascistic stuff. Please don't cancel me for saying fun and fascistic in the same. All right, so the last character I want to talk to you about, maybe we'll talk about Luke after if we want to, but given the fact that, you know, Leia is not the central character necessarily of this series anymore, I think a lot of that has been recentered on a surprising legacy character, which is C-3PO. We know that C-3PO has, like, a big-ish role to play in Rise of Skywalker. Anthony Daniels talked a lot about, like, how people might be surprised to see sort of like everything that C-3PO gets to do in this. And so I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts about, we know that, so C-3PO is and R2-D2 are unique in that they've been in every single Star Wars feature film. That's right, isn't it?
All the saga films.
But aren't they in Rogue One?
They're in Rogue One, but they're not in Solo.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're in Rogue One, but not in Solo. Okay, so almost every... They should have just put them in there somehow.
I know, right?
Keep it consistent. Anyway, so Anthony Daniels, you know, as a performer, you know, like Peter Mayhew has passed away, like that he is like this legacy performer that's still, you know, obviously Billy Dee Williams is in this final installment, but like... C-3PO goes through the events of the prequels, gets his memory wiped, goes through the actions of the original trilogy, and like, you know, loses an arm at some point, is in the sequel trilogy, all this stuff has happened to him. Like, what do you think this franchise might want to say about like droids and like story and like all, you know, especially since like I'm thinking of like we've seen C-3PO tell the story of Star Wars within Star Wars, like act it out. So like what do you think of C-3PO and the value of digging into his character a little bit might play in the final film?
Yeah, I think like he's the character that, yeah, like you said, has been there through all of the things and has sort of been documenting it in a way. I know like George Lucas said that he saw the droids as the narrators of the saga films. We haven't seen a ton of them in these like newer ones. So I do like that they're bringing C-3PO into it, even though C-3PO has never been my favorite droid. I find him pretty annoying. I do think he does have a value to the story in that he's really like the architect of like the memories of things that will be happening going forward. And like, if he gets to keep his memory in this one, well, who knows? I don't know. The trailer kind of throws us off into thinking maybe he's going to lose his memories. I don't really know. But I do feel like there's, you know, that he's like stored within him is this whole entire tale. He's like the book that you would crack open and read all about it, whether or not he remembers all of it. I do think he's at least borne witness to it and it's there in him somehow. And R2 especially. So, I think like sort of integrating him into the main arc of everything this time around will be interesting. We haven't seen how he really plays off of these new trilogy characters yet, so I don't know exactly what the dynamics are. We've kind of seen like Poe be nasty to him. I guess that's really the only like thing that we've seen. So yeah, I'm sure maybe he's gonna come around and surprise everybody with some vital piece of information that they've been like, you know, they've been underrating. He's been underrated this whole time, undervalued, and suddenly he'll be like, by the way, like, you know, I can like do pretty much anything you need to. Like, I'm pretty handy when it comes to trying to like take people down. So maybe I'm useful after all. He'll have like an underdog story, I'm assuming.
P.S. like R2 always has some bit of information that he's been withholding. So
yes. Yeah,
keep your eye on the droids. I like that. All right. Is there anything, I mean, like, obviously we haven't like even barely scratched the surface of what you're capable of talking about, but like, any last words? Well, I guess, yeah, my last question for you is, I don't want to get like too deep into the Luke of it all because like, you know, some people are just simply going to always disagree on whether or not Luke in The Last Jedi is like a brilliant tribute to Luke or a betrayal of Luke's character. I know where you and I stand. I don't, once again, I don't want to like discount, because I've certainly had characters behave in certain ways and stories that I felt was like, like not consistent and been disappointed and frustrated. So I don't want to take that away from anyone. That being said, is there anything that Luke, because we know Luke is in this final movie as a Force ghost or whatever, what could he do in this final movie that would please both those of us who love The Last Jedi and those people who were disappointed in how Luke behaved in The Last Jedi? Is there an answer to please everyone in this final movie?
I really don't know, because like that's a big question that I've just been grappling with. I actually had someone like email me today about Star Wars, and they're like, what do you think Star Wars fans want? And I was like, that's a really good question, because I have no idea. Like, I don't know what would appease the people with the Luke stuff other than him like being resurrected and like taking Palpatine down by himself or some sort of like weird power fantasy, which will never happen. So I don't know exactly like if there's anything in there that could satisfy fans, but I hope fans that are approaching it with like an open mind based on what happened in The Last Jedi, like if they've accepted that as canon, even if they don't like it, I hope that like we can see Luke, you know, we can hear him in the trailers. Presumably that's something that's actually in the movie, is what his voiceover is, what he's saying, which is basically like, we're passing all of this on to you. We're doing this all for you. Like, everything lives in you now. I hope just knowing that like in death, he's still powerful and still able to guide people, because I think we've seen that with Force ghosts, and just knowing that maybe like having his legend sort of carry on in a way that's really meaningful, so that it's not like he just, you know, poofed and died at the end. Like the, right. Maybe like the weight of his sacrifice somehow being relayed to these fans in a way that makes it sink in the way it does for fans like you and I.
Excellent. Love it. Well, I'm hopeful that The Rise of Skywalker is for everyone, and we all agree and have a harmonious Christmas, or holiday, and a happy new year of all loving Star Wars together. What a fun time that would be. Lindsay Romaine, until you and I see The Rise of Skywalker, which is in like a week from now.
Yeah.
Where can people find you?
You can find me on Nerdist.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at Lindsay Romaine.
And if they want to hear you talking about Star Wars stuff, where should they go?
Yeah, so I have a couple of different podcasts going on right now. You can listen to my Raylo podcast, which is called Halo Raylo. Episodes have been a little bit erratic lately due to travel and whatnot, but we've got a schedule of good stuff coming out leading up to and after the movie. And then I'm also doing a Mandalorian podcast with my friend Blake Howard. It's called The Take Mandalorian, and that drops every Friday.
Very cool. All right, Linz. Well, hopefully you and I will have time in our busy upcoming Star Wars week to chat once again post Rise of Skywalker about all these sort of like thoughts and predictions and whether they came to fruition. And so, yeah, hopefully we'll talk to you again.
Yes, I can't wait.
Hello and welcome back to the final ever installment of Kristen Russo tells Joanna Robinson everything she knows about Star Wars without having actually seen Star Wars, starring me, Joanna Robinson, and also Kristen Russo. Hello, Kristen Russo.
Hello, Joanna Robinson. I can't believe the time has come. It's all ending today. This is it. This is the last time you'll ever get to know what I think happened because, as we just discussed off air, I am going to attempt to watch all eight of these films before the final and ninth installment comes out next week.
Please live tweet this whole experience.
I think I'm going to, yes.
Yeah. Amazing. I'm so excited.
I did a little thinking about it today, and I think that I'm going to watch the original trilogy first and then back to the first three and then, like, so that I watch it the way that everybody watched it.
I think that's a great idea.
Okay,
people
cool.
have their differing opinions, but I think that the original trilogy is so good. Mm-hmm. Though it might seem like a little hokey because, you know, it's a little dated for you. But, like, you know, the original trilogy is so good. And then the prequel trilogy can be tough. And then you'll, like, sandwich it. And then you'll end with this trilogy, which we call the sequel trilogy. And those are good, fun movies. So
okay,
I think you'll have a fun time overall. All right. So, you know, we've talked about the original trilogy. We talked about the prequel trilogy. So you, like, have already learned so much about Star mm-hmm. Wars.
Yeah.
But let's just start here. These two movies, The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi, came out within the last 4 years. That's right, right? Yeah. So in theory, you know, they have permeated the cultural conversation somewhat for you, Kristen Russo.
You wish that had any effect on me.
So tell me, let's dive in cold. What do you know about The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, these two Star Wars movies?
I truly, until you just said it was called The Force Awakens, did not know it was called that. So that adds to my theories about what might happen in this sequel. So what did you call it? The sequel trilogy?
Yeah, the sequel trilogy.
I don't know much. I know that Luke is older because I've seen pictures of older Luke. And I know that there's a baby robot named BB-8. And
I was just remembering when you started texting me about Baby Yoda and you were like, what is this movie? And I was like, Kristen, it's a TV show. And you were like, it's a TV show.
Legit, I thought it was the last movie. And then when you were like, it's a TV show, I was like, I must have missed the last movie. They've moved on to the TV show. Like, literally no idea. Like, I don't know why. I mean, I think, like, part of it is that although I have a podcast about a television show and now I'm getting more immersed in, like, TV and movies and all of this sort of conversation, that, like, I really haven't, that's not the thing that I've been talking about, you know, or, like, immersed in at all. And so I just haven't really paid attention. And I never had any attachment to Star Wars. So even if I saw, like, things coming through my feed, I probably just didn't pay attention.
Okay. So Baby Yoda is on a TV show that, you know, BB-8 yes. and old Luke are in these other two movies.
Right. And then I know a lot of the other things that I know from our previous conversations. So, like, right. I know that a Darth Shrunkenhead Vader has passed. He sacrificed his life to save Luke. And I know that Yoda dies. I don't know when that happens, but I'm upset about it and I wish I didn't know. Did I ever tell you my Harry Potter spoiler story?
Oh my god, I'm so upset I found out that Yoda died. It's not fun. I mean, like, R.I.P. Right, Yoda, but just like, happened so long ago. tell me your Harry Potter spoilers story.
Well, so, and this was like actually, it was after the books had completed and had come out, but it was still in like Harry Potter heyday that I started reading the books, and I was tweeting about them, reading them, and somebody just replied to me and said, Dumbledore dies. Like, legit, just, no. That was the tweet. It was so mean. It was like one of the meanest things that anyone has ever done to me on the internet. It was so sad. So that's my whole story. It's a bummer story, but, I forged forward. I read all the books anyway, and I think that Dumbledore dying still had the same emotional impact it would have.
I think that there are people sort of driving around bookstores yelling Dumbledore dies. That was like a thing that happened.
Oh my anyway. God. I just got like the bad kind of chill.
All right. Let's go back to Star Wars.
Yes.
So old Luke, baby mm-hmm. Yoda, a baby BB-8, no baby
Yoda. Right, there's
Yoda.
No baby Yoda in the movies, right?
No, correct. Anyone else in the movies?
I literally don't, like, you might, like, when you said Natalie Portman, when we were talking about the first three, I was like, oh yeah, that rings a bell. Now I can remember that, like, Natalie Portman was, like, on posters and shit at that time. But, like, no, just sitting here thinking about these two films, I don't know anything.
If you had to guess.
Oh, God.
Like, name me one bad guy from the new Star Wars.
Like, the character name?
Sure. Anything.
I don't know anything.
Great.
I really, truly don't. I want your listeners to know I'm not putting this on.
No images, like, nothing flashed.
Oh, is there, like, a white Darth Vader? Is there like a big white mask thing? I don't know, guys.
You're thinking of there's a chrome trooper.
Oh.
Like a chrome thing.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking of. It's like a big mask and it's not black.
I mean, the main mask of the movie, of this movie series is black, but it does not belong to Darth Vader. That's okay.
Oh, God,
but there is maybe you're thinking of some First Order stuff. Anyway, point being, there is something called a Chrome Trooper. Captain Phasma is the name of the character, and it's played by Gwendolyn Christie, aka Brienne of Tarth.
Uh-huh,
I know.
Oh,
right?
My God. I had no idea. I'm thrilled. So she plays the Chrome Trooper?
Yeah, she's just incredibly tall and shiny.
Oh, God.
And British and evil, and it's great.
So, oh, yeah. I am very excited. I was excited even to learn that there was something called a Chrome Trooper, because that shit sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
But knowing that it's played by Brienne is, wow. Yeah. I did not know that, and I'm psyched.
Okay. And then, so old Luke is there, but I'm here to tell you that some other old people are there as well.
Okay.
Who else from the original trilogy do you think might make an appearance?
Okay. So, well, I have... Can I tell you, like, some of my theories?
Because I
try to sit and think about it, and I'm sure all of them are wrong. But I think that... So The Last Jedi gives me a clue about something, that there is just one more Jedi. The Last Jedi, the Jedi race is dying out. I don't know that they're considered a race, but whatever. And so I think that Luke is probably, because he's in the movie and he is a Jedi. So either he's the Last Jedi, or there's like a child of some kind that is the Last Jedi. And I don't know why there's only one, but probably the Force is broken. You know, like kind of like in The Magicians when magic goes away or whatever.
Yeah, sure,
you know,
sure.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So something like that I think is happening. I think that we didn't really talk about how the middle trilogy ended, but I imagine that like the Empire was defeated, but now something is happening. Like something's happening where the war is beginning again after a long time. I think Chewie died. I think Yoda died. And I don't know what happened to the Ewoks, but I really haven't seen any of them. For some reason, I think R2-D2 is in prison. I don't know why I think that, but it's just the thing that came to my brain. Uh-huh. And then I assume that BB-8 is related to the robots in some way.
Like the offspring of...
The offspring. I mean, right. Like, I would want... is it C first? C-3PO?
You nailed it. I'm so proud of
good,
you.
Good. I would think that it would be C-3PO's baby, but I don't know how robot reproduction works in this universe.
Remember how you asked me before if there was like a planet of robots, and I was like, robots are just made, and you were like, oh yeah. Anyway, there are no baby robots. I mean, like BB-8 is a baby, but like it's not a baby.
It's not like a baby baby, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, what if I told you that Princess Leia is in these movies?
Yes, and, I think I did know that.
Okay, and she's no longer just a princess. She is now General Leia.
Oh, Morgana. Shit!
Isn't that cool? Right. Yes. So it's sort of like how Natalie Portman went from like a queen to a senator. Mm-hmm. Leia's gone from a princess to a general.
Amazing.
Han Solo is back.
Han Solo is.
Harrison
played
Ford.
By Harrison Ford, right? Okay, yeah. Great.
Han Solo's back. Great stuff. And then we have a new generation. There's a couple bad guys. I mean, your theory about Chewbacca's still alive. Love to tell you, Chewbacca's alive.
Great.
Still roaring. R2 not in prison, but sleeps for most of the first movie. So okay. I'll give you partial credit for that.
Something must have gotten into my consciousness somehow.
The Force is broken. Yeah, I mean, to a certain degree. I think basically like Luke becomes a trainer of young Jedi, right? Like if you become a Jedi, which mm-hmm. he does at the end of, he's like, I'm going to start a school for Jedi and there's going to be a whole bunch of us and it's going to be great.
Oh, yeah. Very X-Men. Yeah.
But then things go wrong as they often do at Professor X's school for gifted youngsters. And Luke's nephew, Leia and Han's son, Ben,
Leia and Han have a son.
They have a son named Ben, and he goes bad.
Ben? That's the name they gave the son? Everybody has these cool names, and this kid's named Ben?
Obi-Wan Kenobi is also called Old Ben. So,
oh, okay,
like,
okay.
Sort of
so
a,
it has
like
a,
an Obi-Wan reference. Sort of.
Got it.
Ben goes bad, and Luke
like
feels...
Like Sith bad?
Like Sith bad. Ooh, you Sith. I'm so proud of you.
I'm
so learning. Luke feels responsible, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so like basically, and so he takes on this other, he's like, he's like, I'm no longer Ben Solo. Like fuck my given human name. I'm now Kylo Ren. So Kylo Ren.
I know that name, Kylo Ren. Yeah.
Kylo Ren is our bad guy played by Adam Driver.
I fucking told you that the name Ben was not what he was going to want.
He's like, you named me Ben. It's so dumb. Anyway, so he's Kylo Ren. And he is, he's a bad guy. But it's sort of like Vader, where you're sort of like, but can he be redeemed? Can he be brought back to the light? You know, sort of.
But he has a full head, not a shrunken head.
He not only has a full head, but in the first movie, he takes off his helmet because he like worships his grandfather, Darth Vader. And he wants to like be like Darth Vader.
Right.
And so like he has this helmet, and there's the point in the first movie where he takes it off. And I swear to God, I'm so excited for you to watch this because like, it's like there were, I forget who said this. It's someone else's joke. I'm not going to steal it from them without attributing. I don't know who it was though, but like, it's like there were a million tiny hair dryers inside of his helmet because, like, he pulls off his helmet and then his hair is just, like, blown out and just, like, a beautiful mane underneath the helmet. Nary a sweaty, like, forelock among the bunch. So, yeah.
So his helmet is black, like Darth Vader's.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know where the white helmet comes from except for, like, all the... The Empire is gone, but the First Order is sort of like the new evil bad guy.
Right. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
And they wear a lot of, you know, they're stormtroopers. They wear a lot of white helmets. So, all right. So Kylo Ren, our bad guy, our trio of heroes are back. Leia, Han, Luke. They're really bummed about what happened to Ben. They feel that it's the big wound of their lives is what happened to Ben. but, you know, every Star Wars story needs a young hero, right?
Right.
So we had Anakin in the prequel trilogy, and we had Luke in the original trilogy. Do you have any guesses who we might have in this one.
I have zero idea.
Guess what, Kristen? It's a girl.
I should have known this.
And her name is Rey.
Her name is Rey. Okay. Uh-huh. And who is she played by?
Daisy Ridley is the name of the actress. She's like a British actress. She's like, she was pretty unknown before she got cast.
Okay.
But I think if you saw her face, you'd be like, oh yeah, I recognize that face from 4 years of relentless marketing.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So who is she then? Why is she the hero?
That is the big question. 'Cause she just shows up. Mm-hmm. She shows up on a planet. She runs into Han. She interacts with Han. She goes to train with Luke, all this sort of stuff. She's very powerful, but we don't know who her parents are or where she's from.
Whoa. Is she gay?
Like, listen, she's... I think you could... Like, here's what I'll say.
This is great. Already a better answer than no.
She's been, like, kind of romantically linked to, like, Kylo a little bit, mm-hmm. and this character Finn, who's a former stormtrooper played by John Boyega, a little bit. So, like, so far she, like, really kind of only has boyfriends. Mm-hmm. But I will say, she gives off quite a gay energy because she wears these, she wears these, sporty little boots and she's got these sporty, like, capri length almost pants. She wears her hair back in the, she's got some gay energy.
All right. Well, we'll give her bisexual until proven otherwise.
Great. Love it.
Great. Cannot wait.
I would love for Rey to have a girlfriend, but unfortunately they've only paired her with, she's only been around other dudes and Leia, who's like a very maternal figure to her. So
maybe
far,
maybe the force I will bring by watching these films as we get towards the final one will bring the magic that makes her bisexual in the last film canonically.
Make Rey gay again. So there's Rey, and her name is spelled R-E-Y, Rey.
Okay, that's how I pictured it.
So there's Rey, there's Kylo Ren, there's the trio of legacy characters. I'm like almost tempted, like I'm telling you stuff, but I kind of don't want to tell you everything because you're about to watch it. Yeah. I don't know why I'm like all of a sudden worried about spoilers for you.
I've signed up for spoilers, you know, like that's my role. That's my job.
So another aspect of Star Wars that you might have discovered, or maybe we haven't talked about this enough, but there's rebels, there's imperial, like whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then there's almost always like a cocky flyboy. That's like a type of Star Wars. Like Han Solo is one, mm-hmm. like a cocky pilot, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So the guy who plays that in these movies is Oscar Isaac. Do you know Oscar Isaac?
Not by name.
Yeah, he's very handsome.
Okay.
And his character's name, get ready for it, it's so good, is Poe Dameron.
Ooh.
Is the name of this. Yeah.
And he's a good guy, but he's just sassy.
Yeah, a sassy good guy.
Sassy good guy.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Okay. Right. Are there Ewoks?
No Ewoks. There's something called Porgs. And
I've heard of them.
Oh, great.
I don't know why, but
I feel like the cute stuff makes its way to you. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You're like, BB-8, got it. Baby Yoda, all over it. Porgs, heard of them. You know what I mean? So like...
100%. That is what catches my eye.
Yeah. So there's porgs in the second movie and fish nuns.
No,
that's not their technical name, but they're in the second movie too, and I'm pretty into them, the fish nuns.
All I'm picturing are like fish, like but wearing habits, like nun habits.
Yeah. Fish nuns. They're like little squat creatures with fishy faces.
Okay, they sound cute.
And then little wimples. And then they like clean things and get like really grumpy when things are like unclean.
Oh, I like them.
Love them. Great. Love them.
Wait, yeah. Where did the Ewoks go? Ewoks apparently made an impression on me at some point in my life because I'm always thinking about them whenever we do these.
Because they're cute.
Basically,
so like the Ewoks show up in the last movie, the original trilogy. They help win the battle, but then they just like chill on their planet.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So
They're kind of like me. They're just...
I think the reason they haven't brought Ewoks back in a major way is actually they were pretty unpopular when they first showed up because some people thought they were like too cute.
Oh.
Like too cutesy. Like, because Star Wars is serious business, bro. So we might see Ewoks in this third and final movie of this trilogy, please. But they have not been around otherwise. But it's not like they were. It's not like there was Ewok genocide or anything, as far as we know.
So, does Kylo Ren know that Darth Vader sacrificed his life to save Luke?
I think so, but I think he's like, that was his foolish weakness, and I won't be foolish like him, you know, sort of thing. Right. He's basically been, like, poisoned and brainwashed by the dark side. Mm-hmm. And basically what happened is, like, the main characters of these films are Rey and Kylo, are, like, the two main characters of these films. Yeah. And, like, they are both, like, she grew up pretty much alone. She's, like, a scrappy little scavenger from a desert planet, Jakku. So she grew up an orphan, not knowing her parents. He grew up with like two incredibly famous parents, but like there's an intense loneliness that comes with that as well, right? So this whole idea of them being these like very strong in the Force, they're both incredibly strong in the Force, figures who grew up lonely, and it's just sort of like, you could go one way or another.
Right.
And he went one way and she went another.
Okay, I like that.
And it's sort of like, what's going to happen in the end? Is she going to be able to like draw out the humanity in him? Are his like uncle and mother and like father somehow going to be able to like help draw that back out too? You know, like something that Star Wars does that you'll see is it echoes or it rhymes. And so you're just seeing the same similar cycles of like character arcs over and over again in terms of like light and dark and all of that. So
what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think first and foremost, people need to be really worried about the moisture level in the galaxy because no, I'm just kidding.
I was like, yeah, I totally forgot about that. Right. Moisture. Mm-hmm. Check.
Well, no, here's what I'm going to ask you. I'm going to ask you to come up with three planets in this new trilogy. You don't have to name them. I would never ask you to do that. But you remember how we talked about every planet has like its own ecosystem?
Yeah.
So like try to come up with like three planets that like based on an environment. You know, like Tatooine is a desert planet.
Right.
And Endor, where the Ewoks live, is a forest planet. It's a moon, but it's a forest moon. So like like hit me with three things that you might have seen in this trilogy.
Okay, a forest moon, by the way. So romantic.
I know.
Okay, so is there like an ocean planet? Like just water? Just all water?
There might be in this, there's a lot of ocean happening in this last movie in the trailer. So maybe we'll see an ocean planet.
Okay, so I'll pick an ocean planet for one. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to go.
There's an ocean planet. I think there's an ocean planet in the prequels. But anyway, go ahead. Yeah.
This is a little out of the whatever, but like I feel like perhaps where we are in the world, there's like a city planet, like a planet. I mean, I guess that's not like a natural environment, but like I feel like there's a planet that's just like factories and smoke.
There's a planet called Coruscant, which is like sort of the capital planet.
Okay.
That does exist. So I'm going to give you credit for that.
Great. And then, well, I mean, if we have already forest and we have desert, and we have water, what else? I mean, I guess there's like a, is there like a buffalo planet, like a rolling plain planet of just yes. like corn? Yes.
There's one like in the trailer for the last movie. I know we know the name of this planet. I just can't think of it right now. There's a lot, there's like waving, what is it?
Grain.
Waves of grain. Yeah. Gentle waves of grain. There you go. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Oh, and you said three, but there's definitely gotta be a snow planet.
The famous snow planet is in Empire Strikes Back. So you'll see it there. But what's really fun is in The Last Jedi, the second movie of this trilogy, there's a salt planet that looks like a snow planet, but it's salt.
Whoa.
It's really cool. Underneath the layer of salt is this like red, like silica or whatever. So like when you step into the salt, there's like red underneath. It looks really cool.
Cool.
So that's my, it's probably my favorite planet, the crate.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds amazing. Although like, I feel like you'd be so thirsty all the time.
All the time. there's a jungle planet. That's something that exists, which is sort of different from a redwood forest.
Right.
Yeah. So those are some of the planets you can look forward to. Yeah, is there anything else we want to... I mean, I don't know. Like, it's hard. We haven't finished this trilogy yet.
Yeah.
You're just about to watch these movies, and I don't want to, like, spoil anything for
you. Love it. This is one of my favorite conversations, because you don't know what's going to happen.
Whoa. Well, I mean, you know me. I do actually know what's going to happen. I'm just like, can't talk about it.
Well, we'll pretend that you don't know.
Yeah, sure.
At least most people don't know.
Most people don't know. It's true. So you have a chance to experience this with all the rest.
Yeah.
And like, I gotta say, bisexual until proven otherwise is a really good diagnosis for Rey. She's certainly like, she and like maybe Laura Dern, who shows up in the second movie, are
certainly.
Who
does Laura Dern play?
Her character's name is Admiral Holdo.
Like it.
And she has purple hair and like a purple gown, and she rules. She's rad.
You already told me, I think, the answer to this about time. We're not situated in actual time, or we are situated in actual time.
A long time ago, galaxy far, far
right,
away.
Right. Because my theory was that the last movie would end where like somehow Earth would be formed, and then it would all be connected. Right. How did I forget my own theory? what is the planet that the Siths are on? Like what environment do they have?
Oh, they're not on one planet, and often you'll find Sith on like floating battleships.
Oh, okay.
Or like, you've heard of the Death Star. We talked about the Death Star.
Yes.
Death Star is like a planet-sized ship.
Right.
It's this big round thing. So you'll often find them on Death Stars or things that look like Death Stars.
Okay.
So big round ships.
Got it.
Is what they sort of zoom around the galaxy on. But they don't really have like one locale. Other than, like, there's this lava planet called Mustafar. Maybe that, but not really.
Oh, yeah, lava. That's a good environment that I could have guessed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have any other questions, I don't think. I mean, I think that there's probably a million things that I'm not even considering, since I know just the surface of everything. But I'm going to definitely live tweet my journey.
I can't wait. Where can people find you live tweeting?
You can follow me at Kristen Nolene, which is KristinNoeline. And I will let everybody know when I begin, and I'll just make it one big thread of some of my thoughts of the journey.
Do you want to pick a hashtag?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh God, help me, Joanna. You're the writer amongst us.
I'm your only hope.
Yeah.
Maybe we should crowdsource this.
Okay.
People should tweet at you at Kristen Russo.
Yes.
Kristen Russo, right? Not Kristen Nolene. Okay.
Tweet at me. If you're tweeting at me, then tweet at Kristen Nolene. Yes.
Yeah. At Kristen Nolene on Twitter. Tweet at Kristen your ideas for a good hashtag for her watch along.
Yes, please.
This episode's going up today.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. So, they'll be able to get to you in time, in theory.
Great.
To help you name that. But, I'm so excited.
I'm very excited. It's a very Star Wars Christmas over here for me.
Yeah, and then you got to watch Baby Yoda, you know? So
Yeah. Then I'll hop right onto The Mandalorian.
Oh, you know the name of it. That's
I do. That I picked up from my many Baby Yoda tweets.
All right. So any other questions, comments, or concerns before we kill this segment forever? But we might be back for... Kristen Russo tells Joanna Robinson everything she knows about Lord of the Rings.
Please.
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I promise to not watch Lord of the Rings before we do that segment someday in the future. No, I have no other questions. I'm ready for this. I want to thank you for including me in this very cool thing and allowing my lack of knowledge to be a source of entertainment for the masses.
Well, I'm just so glad to see that everyone else is as tickled by your ignorance as I am. So you're the best, and I will be talking to you in a couple days as we discuss the holiday episode of My So-Called Life on podcast. So,
oh my god, it goes up so soon. And actually, today, if this is going up today, today is also the day that our live taping of Fool for Love for Buffering the Vampire Slayer went up. So you can get all more Joanna and Kristen plus Kate Leth and Jenny Owen Youngs in your ears if you head on over to Buffering the Vampire Slayer.
Hey, friends, are you not tired of my terrible Irish accent yet?
Well, oh, my God.
I got a podcast for you.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. And if you follow us on socials at some point in the near future, definitely going to make a little audiogram of Joanna and Kate talking in an Irish accent, a horrible Irish accent for quite some time.
Oh, my God, so much. That's the most I've ever, like, the longest I've ever done that terrible Irish accent.
Oh,
like,
my God. Sustained. It's so fucking funny. It's so, it's just great. So, yeah, you can head on over there to listen to that if you so choose.
All right. Well, we will see you back with some Star Wars knowledge in your head, and I can't wait to talk to you then.
Yay. Thanks, Joanna.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, guys, that is the end of our Star Wars specials, where we are ignorant about the final film in the Skywalker saga, The Rise of Skywalker, because next week, your three intrepid hosts will all be taking in the movie. We're going to record a podcast. Do not expect that podcast to hit before the movie. Expect that podcast to hit after the movie, because we're going to have a section where we talk about our feelings about the ending and details, probably. Maybe just feelings. You'll see. Next week. Until then, where can people find more of your work around the internet? Let's start this week with Mr. Neil Miller.
Well, you can get me over at filmschoolrejects.com, where we're in the midst of our 2019 rewinds. We're doing all kinds of fun stuff for the end of the year. You can also get me on Twitter at rejects or at one perfect shot if you want to follow the big cool account. And don't forget to follow our show at Storm Podcast on Twitter. It's delightful.
And Miss Joanna Robinson.
You can follow me on Twitter at Richard E. Grant is in a Star Wars! or you can find me on VanityFair.com. And yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. I'm on Twitter at DA7E. I'm on the Fighting in the War Room podcast. I'm at Thrillist.com covering The Mandalorian. And I'm amongst you, the people who have already fallen down in the year of our Lord 2019, but only have to live in our shame for a few more weeks. If you're still upright, stay there. See you after Rise of Skywalker.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.